Hey, this is Darryl from the forums, and I just wanted to say congratulations on your upcoming 100th episode. I've been listening to the show since episode one, and it's been through so many incarnations and changes and hosts, and it's still been a fun show to listen to. I'm glad, you know, you have the chemistry you have now. And I just wish you guys the best on the show. You didn't pod fade. A lot of shows went through the pod fade. And this one has been a good show that I think it's one of my top 10 to listen to whenever it comes out. I mean, it may not come out every week or every month, but when it does come out, I enjoy it. So I want to say kudos to you. Keep doing what you're doing. We're enjoying the show. Everybody, we're loving the show. You have fans that enjoy what you do, man. So pat yourself on the back and enjoy it. Peace out.
Comic Timing
is a proud member
of the Comics Podcast Network.
Bitch. Print it.
Welcome to episode 100, part 1 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as Brent Cassina, a rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind for 100 episodes, time after time, here on Comic Timing. We have hit 3 digits, people. It is a milestone episode of Comic Timing. We have back 2 of our favorite guests and a friend of theirs. Got Sean Whalen, Jim Seguin, and Mandy Stiegel from their forums to discuss the icons of the comic book world. Which company has the better icons? Are you one of those icons? Probably not, but listen to the episode anyway. Here now, Comic Timing, and thanks, guys. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 100, part 1 of Comic Timing. There will be multiple parts to this episode as, this one, it's not even just because of the people I currently have on the call, but we're going to be recording 2 separate days because Brent actually cannot make it for this first part here. But actually, he sent us a little greeting. So you know what, before I introduce everybody, let me play his "I'm sorry I'm not here" message that he sent me earlier.
Hey, 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 everybody. It's everybody's favorite absentee co-host, Brent Cassina. Comic Timing, episode 100. You know what's going down. You know that even though I'm not necessarily going to be there for part 1, I'm going to be there for part 2. Part 2 is going to be off the chain, as well as part 1, even though I may not be there to liven things up and, you know, push wood and Vince's buttons and whatnot. You know, I'm sure it'll still be a good episode, but be on the lookout for part 2, because I'm definitely going to be on that. Anyway, I just wanted to say hi and tell everybody I'm sorry that I could not make it tonight for the recording. I wish I could. Shit got in the way. Piss poor planning on my part. Nothing to reflect on, Ian. Just stuff gets in the way, and that's life. But anyway,
I'm going to stop it there, actually, because it goes on for another 18 minutes. So we'll put most of that on at the end of the episode as he will be on to talk about things. So it's not like his opinions aren't going to be heard, and the Vincent Wood part is actually going to be next episode anyway, so that they wind up having to reschedule. So let me introduce everybody on the call here. First off, Comic Timing Virgin, we'll start off with her first. You may know her from Raging Bullets. It's Mandy Stiegel. Hey, Mandy.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well. How you doing? You enjoying the Comic Timing experience already?
Oh, yes.
Is it very different than what you're used to?
No, not a whole lot.
Good, then I'm doing something right. We're also joined this episode by the Raging Bullets crew, because it wouldn't be a milestone episode of Comic Timing without them. So introducing first Mr. Sean Whalen, who was on episode 10 and episode 50 of Comic Timing. So
I was also on Geek Speak, your previous podcast. So
what's Geek Speak? I never heard of it. How you doing tonight, Sean?
I'm very good, Ian. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, and great to be a part of your milestone. 100 episodes is a big thing, pal, so I'm glad to be here.
Glad to be here as well, and glad to have you on. And we're also joined this episode by Jim, my skull is the power source for every podcast, sensei of the whatnot, Seguin.
How's it going, eh?
I just listened to that episode, and you had me cracking up for about 15 minutes with that. Good to have you on, Jim. You know,
it's good to be here.
Well, good.
You are my ambassador of Quan, man.
Ah, yes. Yes. This episode would not be complete without at least one ambassador of Quan, so thank you.
What does that mean?
Jerry Maguire?
Thank you.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I mean, how do you see it?
Well, you see, the way that I look at it is that I bring the Quan.
Ah,
yeah.
That's true.
Quan is this, like, unknown, unspeakable force that I just happen to bring to a podcast when Jim is around.
Exactly. I bring the magic, he brings the Quan.
And Mandy brings the fact that she's the only girl on this call.
Yeah.
I've got the Pepto-Bismol.
Why we need that for this, I'm not quite sure, and now I'm just scared. All right. Well, for this episode 100, as you guys will know, we're going to be doing the same sort of iconic thing that we did for 50, only this time it's a little bit different. This time we're doing which company has the most iconic characters. So we want to know which company / universe, etc., has the most iconic characters. Not one or two, but in general, which group of characters is the most iconic? As in, for you, when you think superheroes, which group of characters comes to mind? And we're also going to talk about some of the characters and some of the universes that you might not necessarily think of regularly that happen to have iconic characters. So we're just going to talk iconic in general here. Now this is part one of this episode. Part two, as of now, tentatively, I will announce it here. This could very well change by the time things are all said and done. But we have set up for that part two. We're going to have Jason Wood and Vince B on in segment one. Then we're going to have on, and after that, Raph Suhu. So don't worry, Sean. I saved you the hassle of having to talk to Raph.
Like Raph.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, so that's all next week, and you'll probably be hearing that a week after this episode comes out. So we'll start things off nice and simple with the big question, the big debate in this episode. Who to you has the most iconic characters? And we'll start it off with why not, Sean? Go ahead.
You know, it's funny. I was making up a list, and I was trying to think of between the, you know, obviously looking at the big two, if you look at Marvel and DC, which characters have the most iconic characters. Mm-hmm. And you'd think with the show that I do that I would go immediately to DC. But my experience growing up with superheroes was so intermixed between the two companies mm-hmm. that, I mean, I'm a child of the 70s when it comes to the superheroes. So it was DC heroes were always kind of the cleaner, the more like you looked up and like, I want to be Superman, but I could never be Superman. I want to be Batman. He was more of a costumed adventurer back then versus mm-hmm. the kind of dark brooding character that we see now. Right. So, you know, kind of more super friends oriented in that point where you had the Marvel characters and they were more earthy. They were more grounded. They had some flaws and they were like, you know, Spider-Man was this teenager who was bitten by this spider, yet he was a gawky teen who, when he was in his Peter Parker persona, you kind of latched onto him because he was a little flawed, you know, and you could be Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. The X-Men, it was the same thing. They were, you know, who hasn't been at some point in time felt like they were left out or an outcast or they didn't fit in. Yeah. And that was, you know, the kind of the key with them. So I really had a tough time deciding between both because I think what makes characters iconic is longevity and the ability to adapt to a larger audience.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, even like speaking of these characters that I just mentioned, evolving to changing times. I mean, these are characters who are not the same now as they were in the 70s. They've evolved, adapted, and changed. So between the two of them, it's really a hard choice for me because I think they've all got certain top-tier characters that have remained their top-tier characters for a reason because of the fact that they are iconic. Your Spider-Mans, your X-Mens, mm-hmm. Your Supermans, your Batmans, your Wonder Womans. And we're seeing some of these characters take a some of the characters that were some of their B-listers now, mm-hmm. like Green Lantern, for example, over at DC, I don't think that character has been as much of an A-lister as he is now.
Sure.
I think he's always been in the high B-list, but he's never been at this point now. But these, you know, that's a character who's clearly iconic now. You know, over at Marvel, a character who has become iconic for me, and I'm no insulting long-term Captain America fans, I've always enjoyed Captain America, but I haven't loved Captain America as much as I'm loving what they're doing with Captain America now. Mm-hmm. Ed Brubaker has made this character so incredibly interesting. So it's funny how I really tried hard to make a decision between the two companies mm-hmm. and found that they both have these sets of characters that in their own way are iconic because of their ability to just adapt and change and evolve as times change. These characters and their concepts are so good and so strong that you can tweak them and yet still stay at the core to who they are. And that's what makes them so compelling and interesting, is because they can adapt over time. Mickey Mouse is a great example of a character who, why has Mickey Mouse stayed around for so long? Because that character has adapted over time. And even outside, like, I don't think the average person knows Mickey Mouse from his cartoons anymore.
Yeah.
They know Mickey Mouse from all the merchandising and from, you know, books and as more as a figurehead and a masthead. I think, you know, these are characters that Spider-Man, there's kids who've never read a Spider-Man comic who know who Spider-Man is.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, same thing with Batman and Superman. They never read those comics, but they know who these characters are. They've kind of exploded beyond their medium. So that to me is, I think both companies have characters that are like that.
Basically, a summary of what you just said is Marvel has the more human characters, DC has the more overpowering characters. Is that the way you would look at it?
It used to be that way. I think now there's become more of an even playing field.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the sense that I think we're seeing DC characters now that are a little bit more grounded in reality, mm-hmm. A little more flawed, a little more human. Flawed is, I don't know if flawed is the right word, but I mean, it's the humanity. I think Marvel was always traditionally known as the characters were really grounded and human and accessible that way. Mm-hmm. And DC's characters were kind of up at a little bit, I don't want to say at a higher level. They were operating at a different, they weren't as accessible.
Okay.
As far as you couldn't feel like you could hang with them. I think now that playing field has completely evened. So that was my experience growing up with them. So I was trying to think about, like, where are they at now? I honestly would say the companies are very even with iconic characters. It's the top tier ones that I think we all talk about now mm-hmm. for me. I mean, this is just my opinion on it. There's certain characters that I think both companies have that are very strong and have evolved over time to become very accessible, very rich characters that have just shown that they're still going to be around 30 years from now.
Oh, yeah.
50 years from now and beyond, because these characters, they're not going to be the same as they are right now. These are characters that are – their concepts are rich enough that they can adapt. They can change. Their concept – you know, some of the Marvel characters are going to be those heroic, like, characters like we've seen Superman, Batman be in the future, you know, because that's where they need to be to evolve at that time. That's what people are looking for. But yet their core concepts are so strong that they'll be the same.
Okay.
So I don't have an answer between the big two. I think it's more certain characters. It's not the whole line. It's certain characters that I think they're the ones that are immediately recognizable to people who don't even read comics. They're iconic because those concepts have gone beyond just the page.
Okay, so you cop out.
Basically, he did, yeah.
By my definition of iconic, that's a little bit of a cop out.
Wow, I just summed you up in a matter of five words. Okay,
I can give you a list from both companies of characters that I think are iconic.
We might get there at some point. But I understand what you're saying, though. It's that it really depends on, I guess, what you would define iconic as. You know.
Yeah, I guess my point is, are the Justice League any more iconic than the X-Men? And I can't see that. You know, it's I think that they're characters that have shown longevity. They've shown growth. They've shown change and adaptation. And these are characters who will be relaunched in film. They'll be relaunched in comics. They'll be relaunched in cartoons over time because they're characters that naturally lead to that, whether as groups or as solo characters, because they evolve and adapt because they're so rich and there is something about them that is incredibly appealing.
Okay. Well, Jim, take the floor.
Well, see, for me, I kind of look at iconic not as how we as comic book geeks view it, but how the outside world views it. People who don't watch comic book movies, who don't watch comic book cartoons or read comic books or any of the thing like that, how do they look and they see it? And the thing that I've noticed is you look at, like, anytime any medium, whether it's, you know, Bugs Bunny or some cheesy banking ad that wants to say their bankers are super bankers, what do? They slap a big red S on their chest, throw a red cape on their back. You know, when you're talking like people who are dieting, they'll say, oh, chocolate's my kryptonite. And everybody knows what you're talking about, you know, with kryptonite being the great weakness of Superman. Why does everybody know that? Because he's an icon. You ask people who Lois Lane is, and even if they've never read the comic or never seen the movies, they'll probably know who Lois Lane is because she's a very famous figure in just general, you know, in history. So you, not even just Superman, but the supporting cast. Same thing with Lex Luthor. You know, I would put money down that people who aren't comic book readers would know who Lex Luthor is. Say, hey, isn't he the bald guy that Superman fights? They may not know the whole details behind it, but they'll know it.
So you know? Well, that and Superman's been around so long.
Yeah.
That basically everybody knows it from your grandfather to your kid.
Yeah, and you know, and I, to be honest, I'm not going to take anything away from Spidey because people know who Spider-Man is. But if I were to do a tweet, tweet kind of sound, like I'm shooting web shooters, people would look at me like I was nuts. Or if I were to do the schnick.
They do that anyways, Jim.
Well, they do that anyways. But if I do the schnick of Wolvie popping his claws, same thing. But I was in
a. You don't think people would know the rage of the Hulk? I got to disagree with you here.
I don't know if
I think Spider-Man and the Hulk are much more recognizable than you're giving them credit for.
If I were to, well, if I were to say something like Jim Smash, I don't think people would get the Hulk reference. Just like if I were to say it's clobbering time before I hit the wall, I don't think people would get the reference.
Do you think people would automatically know Truth, Justice, and the American Way?
Yes.
I disagree. And
I also think
for the exact same reasons you're stating.
Friendly neighborhood Jim Seguin. I mean, I think a lot of people would know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
To commemorate 100 episodes of Comic Timing, we're going to be giving you an inside look into Comic Timing and some of the stuff you may not have seen before. Well, technically heard before. This is some of the stuff that wound up on the cutting room floor. Translation: the conversation before I usually start recording the show. It's the test recording, which often gets left out. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Lost Moments in Comic Timing History! And it was pretty good.
Hello.
You.
What's up?
Not too much. What's going on with you?
Is your room emptied?
Not even close.
Everything but clothes?
Not even close.
Not even close. When do you move out? Saturday?
It's it's a staggered move out. It's a staggered move out. I have all the books packed and all the manga packed and all the DVDs packed, and basically all I got to do is pack clothes and you know, put away
all the important
other
stuff,
things.
Right? All the important stuff.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, really, all I got to do is like go through my my closet, decide what I'm taking, what I'm not, and put that in a suitcase, and you know, pack the suitcase. Because I mean, that's going to be the easiest way for me to, you know, take clothes with me. So that and empty out the drawers that I'll be taking with me, which is, you know, the somewhat more difficult part, considering that I've got years worth of crap in there that needs to be cleaned out.
Just throw the drawer in a box and take the box with you.
No, this is like a set of drawers. This is like a dresser.
Yeah, your armoire or whatever, the white thing.
Right. No. That's not even it. It's where I keep. Like, right now it's where I keep all my, like, underwear and socks and shit. That's in the hall because my place is that fucking small. Look at the place where I currently live.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, of course, in the new place, I'll actually have room to put shit, so I can probably take that with me and put it in one of the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are you snacking on?
Lemon animal crackers.
lemon animal crackers? I didn't even know they made lemon animal crackers.
They're good.
Hmm. Wow.
I'll stop so we can get going.
Yeah, that would be good. Because, you know, I'd love like halfway through. So, what's your take on pricing? Yeah, and this is your first time you get to record on the new hotness.
What?
The my new mini recorder I got.
Oh.
It's the Zoom H2. So we're going to be recording at, I think, 320 kbps MP3s. I had it set to Wave before this, but I decided to set it to MP3 for your sake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since I'll be sending this file to you, since you'll be the nice person who's editing it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I figured as much.
Yeah, I'm about an hour into the politics episode, and it's a 3-hour show, so.
Oh, man.
I know. Yeah, well, you'll be happy to know that, you know, once I have an office space set up, Raph might be sitting in on some shows live in studio.
Oh no!
Well, it's not like you'll be looking at him.
Yeah, that's your problem.
Yeah, thanks.
Some teeth whitener.
Oh God! Yeah, they are pretty yellow.
Yeah.
Oh, miso soddy.
I guess this must be all the egg yolk and that they put in the I don't know what the fuck they make over there in their Chinese restaurant.
What, dim sum or
dim sum, egg fried rice, and you know, fried chicken.
We are horrible, horrible people.
Lemon chicken.
Man. Yeah, yeah. Why are you giving them a Mexican accent? That's what I want to know.
I don't know, but Raph likes us, so it's okay.
Yeah, for now. For now, until he hears us doing all this shit, because I'm sure you're going to put it in the back like a dicky that you are. What were the bloopers on that? Anyway, I still have yet to listen to the entire episode.
What? You just have to listen to it.
Oh, goddamn it, motherfucker. Making me actually listen to
while you move.
Right, yeah.
I know, right? God.
Well, funny thing, when we move, it might be the first time my girlfriend gets to meet my best friend, you know, after 2 years.
Your little monkey on the side of your bed?
Yeah, right. Thank you. No, my friend Brian, this seems to be a going trend where, like, we don't hang out nearly as much as we used to. I've known him since, like, the second grade.
Hmm.
And, like, they've still yet to have met after 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, usually because, you know, when I hang out with him, it's nothing but, you know, like video games and, you know, random, like, references that we've been making since we were, like, four. But, yeah, now they get to actually meet, which will be interesting.
I said, I bet she's excited.
Oh, yeah, she's thrilled.
So excited.
Yeah. Well, no, she's just happy to be getting this shit over with. And frankly, I don't blame her.
You guys have been looking that long?
About 2 months.
Oh, that's not that long.
Yeah, although, actually, technically it was a little longer than that. But, yeah, well, I mean, we've been talking about it forever. So,
yeah.
You know, now actually doing it is good, and actually having a place that's as big as I showed you certainly makes life easier.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's much bigger than what you got now.
Gee, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, because my room, that's proportional for the rest of the apartment.
At first, when you were walking in that long hallway, have you seen the Adam Sandler, Don Cheadle movie?
No, I haven't.
Rain Over Me? He has an apartment similar to that where there's a long, long hallway.
Oh, yeah.
To, like, the main room, so that's what I thought at the beginning. But, of course, his apartment's much, much bigger than what you got.
We're thinking we'll put up either some Alex Ross art or some, like, random, like, comic book pages as you walk in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we're both nerds.
Yeah. Comic book pages in frames be a lot better.
Yeah. We realize that, but first we need to get pages and frames.
Oh. Yeah.
Although it will be nice to be able to put up some of the sketches I've gotten at frickin' cons already.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah. Put up my Erica Hesse. One of two. Or two of two.
Didn't you get some other stuff at MegaCon, or that was in a book?
Yeah, I got that, but that was all in the book.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I think you're making
a valid point, Jim, but I think you're discounting some of the catchphrases that are put with some of Marvel's characters that have been around since the 60s that are really strong characters. I think Spider-Man is every bit as recognizable as Superman.
I give the edge slightly to Superman over Spidey, mm-hmm. just because of some of the stuff where it's just not just Spider-Man. You know, Spider-Man's recognizable and Superman's recognizable, but the fact that Superman
did you see how much money the Spider-Man film made?
I was gonna
because
say,
it was a good
yeah.
movie.
Yeah,
it was. It's it, see, that's one thing. I,
wow,
people yeah. know it. Then
hold on,
but there.
All right. Let's let Jim finish his point.
Go ahead.
You know, one, I look at the Spider-Man movie and the X movie as trends, just like the Iron Man movie. It's a trend. I don't think you can really add that to the iconic nature. Now, Spidey is an iconic hero. I don't want anyone to think I don't think he is. I just give, like, if I'm, like, doing a checklist between Spidey and Superman, I give the edge to Superman because Soup's supporting cast is more recognizable than Spidey's supporting cast.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends. Spider-Man was on the show Electric Company. Spider-Man had a 60s cartoon. Mm-hmm. Spidey had his own solo cartoon. Spidey had a cartoon that aired on MTV. These movies that you're saying are trends, we're now going to be working on the fourth film with how much time in between all of them? Spider-Man merchandise is flying off the shelf. As a teacher, I see kids dressed up as Spider-Man still every year. I guarantee you these kids aren't necessarily reading the comic books. So there is something iconic about this character and cool. Yeah. I also see kids dressed up as Venom, his villains, and things like that. So there is a culture to this character that I think is every bit as recognized. You know, I'll be honest with you. I see more kids dressed up as Spider-Man than I see as Superman. I'm not taking anything away from Superman. I agree with you on his iconic status. I'm a huge Superman geek. But Spidey is every bit as up there now. There's Superman obviously has been around longer, but really, we're talking about the 60s. How much longer could Spidey be around now? We're in 2009.
Trends do definitely have something to do with it, because right now when you look on television, you'll see that there's still a Spider-Man cartoon that airs on Disney all the time, mm-hmm. and that's the current one. Well, meanwhile, Superman, the only thing that he's come out with recently in the animated form would be the DC animated movies. You know, not really mm-hmm. that much of a something that you could really draw to, except for Super Friends, which is that a cartoon at this point, or are they still working on that? I
think they're still working on it.
They're still working on it. Okay.
That's not officially out.
Okay, all right. So that's not officially out yet. So I'd be curious to see, once that's officially out, if the trend changes a little bit, because it can even depend on how many animated versions of characters there are out there for the little kids to see, because those are the ones that you'll see running around, you know, dressed as a particular character. Spider-Man, not only is he in his own, you know, Disney show right now, but he's also on the Marvel superhero what is it? Marvel Superhero Power Hour or whatever it is. The almost like bobbleheads.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And
I think it's the Marvel. I think it's the Marvel superpower. I could be wrong.
Something like that. Yeah.
I know exactly which cartoon you're talking about.
Right.
Touching on Jim's point, though, he's talking about adults. So, yeah. I mean, we've covered, obviously, that the kids, there's a little bit more access to
Marvel's doing a great job with, you know, with getting their characters out there. That's something DC really is dropping the ball, in my opinion. It's, you know, we're seeing a lot more the Marvel, you know, non-comic book medium, which does get it out there, does make it popular. When I think iconic images, I think, and not to take anything to any kids or anything like that, but I do not think younger kids. I think adults, you know, young adults, older adults, you know, and just the, but it's,
how
I also,
many, how many adults
outside,
who don't,
hold wait, on, one second.
But, wait. How many adults? Iron Man is a great example of a character. Now, I think Iron Man has become an icon now.
See, I don't think Iron Man's become an icon. Iron Man's become popular, and Iron Man's become an interesting character, a good – but I wouldn't list him in the iconic era yet.
I can give you that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I think he needs to maintain that level of popularity for so long
Yeah.
Before he really
he's on the road of potential for it.
Yeah.
Yes, could be.
Well, let's sway it over to Mandy a little bit. Put a little bit of your own two cents in here for the iconic debate.
Okay. Well, I can take points from what both Jim and Sean are saying. Me personally, you know, only really being in comics for a few years, and I read almost exclusively DC. Every once in a while, like, I don't even really read anything from Marvel right now. Actually, I don't. I'll just say that. I don't. So, I mean, not to say that I'm not familiar with any of those characters. You know, obviously, Spider-Man, I'm familiar with him. I know the whole backstory and, you know, his supporting cast of characters just because he's out there. You know, he's accessible. You see him everywhere. I've seen episodes of this cartoon from the 60s and the one that was on MTV and, you know, all those and seen all the movies. So I'm familiar that way. I've seen the X-Men movies. Honestly, didn't really care for them. So, but, you know, I was a little skewed because I'm, you know, a DC person. So I tend to lean towards DC, and that's just my personal preference. Mm-hmm. But not to take away from the fact I do believe that Marvel has those iconic characters.
Okay, what is it that you feel makes DC superior in the iconic sphere?
Well,
right now?
It was something that Sean brought up actually. It's to me, comics is something that is kind of like an escape, mm-hmm. a little bit. And you know, Sean mentioned about, you know, those Marvel characters being a little more grounded, and you know, you seem to what little I do know of Marvel, you seem to see those more real world type problems with Marvel. And with DC, it's more of those fantastical elements that you see that is like, okay, that would never happen. And, you know, it's those elements that I tend to enjoy more. So, I mean, that's what really draws me towards those characters. Yeah, are there 52 Earths? No.
Hey, don't knock the 52.
Oh, I'm not knocking the 52. I like the 52. But just, you know, the idea that, you know, are there 52 parallel Earths out there? No, not really. But it's cool to think about.
Yeah. And what's different also is that because there are 52 Earths out there for DC, that can be a little bit confusing to the outsider that might see a version of a character that they're
exactly.
not too familiar with. And while Marvel, usually most of the time, the Spider-Man you see is a Spider-Man you know.
Right. And I think one thing, I was watching the X-Men movies. A friend of mine couldn't believe I hadn't seen them. And I'm like, I just don't know about it, you know. And I have not read X-Men in the comics. But watching the movies, it bothered me a little bit that Wolverine, who's supposed to be a good guy, was slashing people up and down. It bothered me a little bit. You know, I'm like, this guy's morally ambiguous, I think is how I worded it. And it's like, yeah, you're not supposed to think that much about it. And I'm like, well, sorry, I do. But that to me personally is just something that doesn't appeal to me. So, yeah, that's why I tend to go towards DC more. Now, not to say that I won't ever read Marvel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've even went over to Dark Horse. I started reading The Umbrella Academy.
Great book.
And yeah. Loved it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've read all of that and enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And that's just a really messed up title. Because those characters are, wow, messed up is just a really nice way of saying something else.
Well, Paris is safe and the Eiffel Tower got away, but
yes.
But the day is saved. But you know what that means? Ice cream.
And Kennedy's still alive.
Yes.
Jim's covering his ears and saying la 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 because I know he hasn't read it, and I have. It's awesome.
Yeah, I haven't read this. I'm like,
It's Umbrella Academy is very good,
and the art. Oh, the art.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and those are the types of characters. It's like, you know what? Give it 30 years, and if Gerard Way continues to write those characters, I can see those characters becoming iconic.
Well, especially if he stays in the limelight for all 30 years. You know,
yeah.
If he's still a popular musician within that 30-year span, that might also help the iconic
because
feature.
Admittedly, that's part of what made me want to start reading it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, hey, I knew this guy. I knew the name. So I said, hey, I'll give this a try. Now, after maybe the first 3 or 4 issues of that first arc, then I was reading it because it was cool and I liked it, you know?
Right.
So, but you know, yeah, if he sticks around and keeps doing it for 30 years, I can totally see those characters becoming iconic.
When you say you haven't seen different versions of characters with Marvel, one of the things I was thinking about, first of all, the X-Men has had its share of multiverses.
Mm-hmm.
There are couple beasts running around.
Yeah.
There were a couple versions of Cable. There was actually a whole different world that was created by Legion during that whole Age of Apocalypse thing, which is great. I'm not knocking it.
Right.
But I mean, they've done their share of exploring that too. There was Heroes Reborn, where, you know, basically everyone was put into this pocket universe where they kind of tried to reboot everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they've tried their share of experimentation with that too. I think that's something in comics. Exploring multiple universes isn't something exclusive to DC.
Oh, certainly not. Certainly not. It's just that in comparison, I would say that DC does do it a lot more than Marvel does.
And that's one of the things that I adore about DC, agreeing with that, is the multiverse, the ability to explore that. They do get grounded, though. There are stories where they get grounded in emotional relationship issues. Even if they are fantastical, they are rooted in things that we can connect with. There's things going on in Wonder Woman right now with family and issues with can I step outside of what's expected to me by my family because I believe it's the right thing to do for me to move on? You know, it's basically leaving home. And I mean truly leaving home in the sense that you are now making a life of your own. And because it's the right thing to do, that's being explored. I mean, those are things that DC Comics is exploring. And it is one of the things when I said before that I think the two universes are a lot more similar now than they are different. I think while we're seeing those fantastical things that we're used to seeing with DC, we are seeing them come a little closer and more accessible and connecting to readers now in a way that perhaps that they didn't in the past. And I think some of that is because, you know, they're taking elements of what worked at Marvel. There's writers now who are fans who've grown up reading both Marvel and DC and taking elements of both that are adapting, and vice versa, where I think we're seeing some things right now. Ed Brubaker, who was writing some wonderful things over at DC on the Bat books, is now taking over a Captain America. And I think we're seeing elements of things that worked for him over at DC and Captain America, yet not taking anything away from who Captain America is and really energizing that character in a way that he needed as well. So I think you're seeing, you know, a lot more blending of those type of things, which I think it's refreshing because I think you're getting some really cool different storytelling because of it in both universes.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And also along the lines of the whole, you know, different differences and stuff like that, I would say one of the things that Marvel has a little bit more than what DC has, and this is also sort of going along the lines of what Jim was saying about popular versus iconic, I would say that Marvel probably has a little bit more of a revolving door when it comes to who is iconic when than what DC has. Because you can look at DC and there's always going to be a Batman, there's always going to be a Superman, there's always going to be a Wonder Woman, even if there are different people in the costume at the time. With Marvel, over the past 5 years, you've seen them try characters like Ms. Marvel, bringing them to the top of the spotlight. You've seen Nick Fury go away and then come back and become iconic. You've seen Iron Man become from a bit player who happened to be, you know, yeah, sure, he funded the Avengers and was an Avenger for a long time, to becoming the face of the Marvel Universe for a while, where he was in every single book. No matter what you opened up, Iron Man was in it, and you were bound to see it. Nova, another character that, you know, 5 years ago, if you would have said Nova was going to be one of the most recognizable characters in Marvel Comics, people probably would have laughed at you, you know, because he was a new warrior. He wasn't doing anything. And now he's the space hero of the Marvel Universe. You know, I mean, he's Adam Strange level in a lot of ways when it comes to Marvel. And they tend to, I think, cycle out who is important in their universe a lot more than what DC does. And I think, in a way, that's what puts them over the top for me when it comes to icons. Although, yes, it can be a bit confusing for somebody who might pick up a comic from, say, you know, 5-10 years ago from Marvel and see characters that are not necessarily there now. I think it's a little more refreshing to see characters getting their shot at being at the top.
Are we saying iconic? And there's no right or wrong answer to this. Are we looking at iconic as far as iconic in the comics, or iconic as not, obviously it would include the comics, or iconic as universally recognizable in all medium?
That's a good
just
question.
To the average layperson on the street, because I think there's very different answers, and the answer to that really adds more weight to some of what Jim was saying before. I'm kind of curious as far as how are you looking at this, Ian?
Well, actually, now that you mention it, there really should be, I guess, maybe two different classes that we could be looking at here for the iconic to the masses and iconic to comics. Because going along the lines of what I said, yeah, you're right. That is iconic to comics, but I'm sure the layman on the street won't know who Nova is.
Because you're making excellent points. I mean, there are characters who I think we're all seeing in comics who are taking, you know, kind of a bigger stand in both companies, but. If you were to talk to the average layperson on the street, what we're seeing as iconic as comic fans is going to be different than – because it goes back to what Jim was saying before about Superman and a lot of his comments on there. That does apply to what does the layperson see as certain characters, because Nova is obviously somebody outside of there. The person that Jim was talking about with Superman before is not going to know Nova.
I would agree with that. I mean, Jim. Well, Jim, how do you see iconic? I mean, are you looking at it mostly just as the everyman on the street, or is there a separate category for you for comic fans and iconic?
For me, iconic, you know, the first thought that pops in my head is not the comic book fan. It's the everyday average person on the street.
Okay.
And that's the only reason why I give Superman the edge over Spider-Man, because I think. Superman has a more of a recognizable and more of an understanding for not just the man, but his supporting cast. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas you start talking comic book fans, you start talking casual comic book fans, Spidey could probably very easily edge him, because there's so much out there on Spider-Man as compared to what's out there for Superman.
Right.
Do you think that's just for – I'm honestly asking this question, Jim. Do you think that is just for the comic book fan, though, for Spider-Man?
If you have the casual comic book fan, or the comic book movie fan, or the person who's not actually reading a comic book but thinks the concept of superheroes is kind of neat, I think they probably they'll know a little bit more about Spidey. They'll know more a little bit about the X universe than they would about the JLA or the JSA or the Legion or even Superman, just because there hasn't been so much out there, you know, as there is currently going on with the Marvel Universe. So when you said how you see more costumes of Spider-Man than you do of Superman, that makes perfect sense, because there's more going out there.
Okay.
For me, that's not the definition of iconic. The definition of iconic for me isn't these people who think superheroes are neat. It's the everyday average person who's never read a comic book, who doesn't know anything about comics, but you have a little stick figure with a red S on its chest and a cape. They're going to know, okay, Superman. They'll know Superman, even though
you don't think
never
if you showed
anything.
Them. You don't think if you showed them a stick figure with a spider on it and the spider webs through it, that they would not recognize that as Spider-Man? I'm not saying it to argue with you. I'm asking you the genuine question.
I think if you had a man with a spider, yeah, people would recognize it, but they would never, you know, encompass the theory or thought of Spider-Man into their regular everyday thing. Like if you had somebody who wasn't a comic book fan and I were to do the chest motion where I'm opening up my shirt, they'll probably know what I'm talking about. Or if I were to go dun da 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 da, you know, or anything like that, they would know what I'm.
How do they know the general gist behind it? How do they know that? Where do they get
because
that knowledge from?
He is such an icon.
Well, but where does it? But so Jim, you can't just say it doesn't magically pop in their head. Where do they get that information from? Where are you? What are you? I agree with you, but I guess my point is that in order for you to answer this question, I think you're going to see you have to say the same thing about Spider-Man. Where are they getting that knowledge about Superman from?
Okay, well, we'll see. See, for me, part of this is also that, yeah, you can do the and they'll know what you're talking about because that has stuck around over the years. That's not just something that was around while it was on the air. Or whatever, and then went away. You know, if I were to say to a comic book fan, "I am Iron Man," you know, they'll start laughing. But nobody else is going to get that reference because they've never seen the 1990s Iron Man cartoon show. You know,
how many people would recognize the 60s Spider-Man song?
A lot.
Yes, and that, I agree. Yes. A lot of people would understand. They would recognize a Spider-Man. Yeah. Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Then that's probably where they would be stopped. They wouldn't be able to go on with the song.
Mm-hmm.
So there
you don't,
it is.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
So Spidey is iconic. He definitely is iconic. I don't want to say he's not. I just say when I compare him and Superman, I do give the edge to Superman. And it's, you know, it's the main thing is because I think the comic book people, the non-casual, semi-casual, or a person who thinks a superhero is the concept behind a superhero is neat, would somewhere along the way in their life come exposed to Superman, would understand some of the Superman inside jokes.
From where?
Just in that it's been out there. It's been people have used the concept. People have used it in just any other thing other than comic book related.
Family,
like I said,
Family Guy, Simpsons, even stuff like that. You know, it can show
Spider Pig. Yeah. Spider Pig
does whatever a Spider Pig does. Right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But there's just as many Spider-Man references throughout the media. That's the point I'm trying to make here. Mm-hmm. Everything you can say about Superman, you can say about Spider-Man. He's had that longevity.
Well, okay, but bringing it back to, you know, which company has the most iconic characters or whatever, we can count how many characters are iconic amongst this definition of, yes, they're long-standing, yes, there are people from, you know, 60, 70 or whatever years ago that would still be able to understand it, whatever. I think DC might actually have a few more of those than Marvel.
That might be fun to go that route then. Why don't we talk as a group about obviously Superman and Spider-Man are ones we're saying are iconic characters. We can all agree on that, whether as far as we're agreeing with which one is more iconic or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that might be a fun way to determine this then, because maybe that is the way to resolve this.
Okay.
Obviously, the next one would be Batman. Who doesn't
solid,
know Batman?
Iconic. You know, everybody, people know who Bruce Wayne is. People know who Batman is. They probably even know Alfred. Once you get beyond that, I don't know.
Friend of mine just named their child Grayson.
Oh,
really?
Wow.
Nice.
Were they a Batman fan or were they just?
The dad is.
Okay.
Yeah. And he convinced her that was really a pretty cool name.
Note to self. I'll have to name one of my kids Drake or something.
Yeah.
Lost moments in comic timing history.
I think 11 o'clock is one of the better shows out there, to tell you the truth.
When I finally caught on to it, I was like, damn, this is, I need to start listening to this.
Yeah.
For a roundtable comic, I mean, a roundtable, I mean, more than two guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's one of the better shows out there.
Yeah.
If not the best show, even better than Around Comics.
And even better than Comic Timing, you know? I mean, screw those guys.
Well, no, but primarily you guys are a two-man organization.
I'm only teasing, Chris. Don't worry.
I know. But as far as, I mean, you have revolving guests and everything, but so I still consider you guys a two-man operation, even though you have a round table.
Right.
I'm glad we're a two-man
their round
now.
Table is, their round table is like a fixed foursome, though. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm comparing it to like CGS on around comics. That's basically what I'm comparing them.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That sort of stuff. And I would agree with you on that because, I actually listened to almost every single Weapon O'Clock Comics episode, and there are certain episodes of those shows that I just can't listen to. You know, for either because, you know, even when 11 O'Clock Comics is talking about something that I don't really care about, I still listen to the show. So I think that says something.
So you listened to the one with Derek and I on it then?
Yeah, I did actually.
Oh, cool. Good.
I've only listened to 29 and 30.
We got paid for that, you know.
Oh, really? Fuck, I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah, really. What are we doing wrong? We're getting paid.
As a group, what are your feelings on the Hulk? So let's do a Marvel character. I think the Hulk is a very recognizable character.
I would say so as well. Not just because of his 70s TV show.
No, not at all. I think it's been parodied so many times. I think we've seen that throughout culture in cartoons, in films. The Hulk has appeared, I think, in so many different places. People are more – I would say outside of Spider-Man, the Hulk is probably the next most recognizable character. I don't know. And if you guys disagree with me, please go ahead.
Oh, I think he's definitely recognizable. I mean, I think my first exposure to him was really from the 70s TV show because I remember being scared to death of him as a child. You know, my dad would be watching it, and of course, I was like 4 or 5 years old, and, you know, I see this big green man on TV, and I, you know, ran from my bedroom.
Okay, see, do you still run into your bedroom when you see the Hulk?
No, I actually saw Lou Ferrigno at at Chicago Comic Con, and I was like, yeah, steroids.
did he charge you money for looking at him?
Actually, we kind of standing a few feet away from he was, you know, having his picture taken with someone. Uh-huh. And we were standing a few feet away and I said to my friend, I said, take a picture. And, you know, so she's taking a picture and the flash goes off and he looked over at us like, how dare you? You know? And we turned around and walked away.
It's like, damn it, he saw us, run for your life.
Oh, man.
Well, he's notorious for charging for everything. So I'm sure he was thrilled. Hulk would be there as well, mostly because you know you see the cereal boxes, you know you see the Hulk hands, you see the foam fingers and stuff like that, and Hulk branded merchandise is all over the place. So that would definitely be number two for Marvel there.
You know what, Ian, when I said that, though, and I don't want to discount this, you almost immediately, when I said I think he might be the second most recognizable for Marvel, you were ready to say something. Dude, and maybe I misread you. Who are you? I'm curious who you were thinking of.
I was actually thinking Captain America would be number two.
Hmm.
Mostly because when thinking about Marvel, not only is he the one that's been around the longest – and has had the most longevity and has had the most staying power in, I'd say, in merchandising and in both in comic books and in real life. I mean, yeah, sure, there might have never really been that good of a Captain America movie. Let's pretend that first one never happened. But he's always sort of been in the public eye, whether it be in underoos, whether it be in toys or merchandising and or stuff like that, and he's been in all the cartoons, in guest appearances. He's appeared in enough forms that I think he is recognizable to the everyman. And because most importantly, he was another one of those war icons that you can say a Superman was or something like that, and that goes a long way, I think. So.
That is interesting.
I would give Cap over Hulk, to be honest with you guys.
Really?
Here's the main reason why.
You think the average? No, I mean, and actually, I'm going to ask both of you this. Do you guys think the average layperson knows who Captain America is?
Yes.
Yes, and they know the concept. They know the concept.
I knew of him.
They know of him. Now, do they know the specifics behind it? Do they know that he's dead or not dead? I don't. They don't know that stuff behind it. But what they probably really know of the Hulk is the basic stuff. Mm-hmm. If you were to go up to somebody and say, hey, do you know who David Banner is? No, they probably wouldn't know the name. You know, if you say
do they know Steve Rogers,
probably not. No. I'll say they probably don't know that. You know, maybe it's just the patriotic type thing. I think there's been more types of spoofs and satire types of Captain America.
Where?
And that concept of Captain America.
Where?
Well, like any time. One of the things I think is
over the Hulk.
See, yeah, because when you see anybody go with a Captain on the hero name. Whether it's I'm not talking legitimate comics. I'm talking like spoofy satire stuff. If you
like, give me I'm serious. Give me an example because I don't know where you're seeing all this Captain America stuff outside of comics.
Like even just you know cheesy TV commercials, stuff like that, where somebody creates a superhero that's a Captain something. Yeah. You look at his basic design, you'll see the big broad star. You'll see maybe even a shield. You'll see more a spoofing satire type of Captain America.
On
now,
what?
You will see just
– I've seen him on a bunch
of – Give me one.
I've seen him on a bunch of commercials.
Yeah, I know what he's talking about.
I can't give you a specific –
Like, hi, I'm Captain Plumber, and I'm here to save the day. You know,
thank you. That type of stuff.
You know, like that.
But don't you think that's more of a spoof of like Superman or Mighty Mouse?
No.
Well, when you see the I'm super plumber, I'm super banker, that's the spoof of the Superman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when you see the spoof of the Captain America, you're going to see the hi, I'm Captain, I'm Major Fury, I'm yada, yada, I'm this. I'm, you know, where they put that rank, the military rank, and you look at kind of like they'll have the star spangled, the red, white, and blue type costume. And it's,
okay,
it's very, it's, you know, and I think you see more of that than the Hulk.
And political satire as well. Specifically with you saw it most, I think, like when the whole Iraqi situation started. When I would open up the Daily News, I would see on occasion some sort of Captain America spoof in there. And I think that, you know, considering that, yeah, sure, you could say the newspapers are a dying breed, whatever. But, you know, if you turned on Fox News, if you turned on, you know, CNN or any of the news channels, you were much more likely to hear, you know, a Captain America reference than you'll ever, ever, ever hear a Hulk reference. And those are going
see,
out.
I disagree with you. I think there's been just as many Hulk spoofs. I honestly think there's been more Hulk spoofs and more Hulk satire than there has been. I love Captain America, so I'm not taking anything away from Cap.
Okay.
And as a comic fan, I think he's an iconic character. And we might just disagree here, and that's okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I do think out of the two, I think to the average layperson, the Hulk is a much more recognizable character, a much more recognizable concept. I think people understand it more. That's just my take on it. I mean, go ahead. You've got definite points you're making about Captain America, and it could be we just agree to disagree, and that might be fun for the listeners in the forum afterwards to kind of do their own point counterpoint and, you know, make their own decision on it. So, I mean, I don't want to cut you off there because you're making – go ahead and make your point about Cap in the news.
Well,
because you're right. I do agree with you that those are there, so I'm not disputing that.
Oh, yeah. Basically, just to end my point with this, because I was getting close to it anyway, is mostly just that I think that when TV personalities mention a character, it sticks in your mind a little bit better than when other people do. If it's, you know, just like your friend down the street, or if it's you know, the guy at the car wash saying, hey, wow, I'm hulking out, I'm so angry today, you know, versus you know, like Bill O'Reilly or something like that saying we need more patriotic people like Captain America out there, you know, yada yada yada. You know, you might not agree with his views, but he's certainly making the point, you know, that
I guess
the name is out there.
I guess my point there is, though, do you think, like, when you talked about these Captain spoofs, do you think the average layperson associates that with the comic book character Captain America? Or that they're just using a generic Captain and they're pulling – yeah, they might be pulling from that. I'm talking about, like, that type of concept. But do you think the average layperson understands who Captain America is, the fact that this guy's got a shield, and that in the same way that they would associate that the Hulk, when he gets angry, changes into this monster that's uncontrollable? I guess that's the part I'm trying to get at here.
I would mostly because of all of the – like I said previously, all the older war images that are out there that people have been seeing for years that have continued to be passed on. I mean, again, there are plenty of Hulk spoofs out there. I mean, hell, there's one of my favorite bits that SNL's been doing the past couple of years is The Rock Obama. you know, where Obama transforms into The Rock, and it's a Hulk type character, you know. That so that part is definitely out there. But for me personally, and you know, again, disagreements are certainly happy to happen. I think Captain America would be number two over the Hulk.
Okay,
that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
We talked about Batman briefly. We probably should talk about why is Batman on the list? And where does Batman fit in regards to, I guess if we're looking at the big two, where does Batman fit in regards to Superman? Do you guys think Superman is more recognizable than Batman?
Ooh, that's a good question, actually.
Because we talked about Superman versus Spider-Man, but I don't know, do we want to keep this between companies, or do we want to take a look at who are the more iconic characters and why?
We can certainly do that. Sure, yeah. Well, Mandy, let's go with you first on that one.
Man, I think it goes back and forth, really. As far as, like, popularity, they relaunched the movie franchise. Batman's everywhere. Every time, you know, when The Dark Knight came out, Batman's everywhere. You know, it's waning a little bit right now, but, you know, if you're looking at it from, you know, the comic reader, man, there's... It seems to me like a lot of people are still flying high on Batman right now. But I don't know. I think I still have to give the edge to Superman just a little bit. But Batman's definitely up there, and he's definitely, I mean, that character is definitely always, you know, vying for that top position as far as, you know, who's more recognizable.
Well, I would definitely go with Superman over Batman. Mostly because Superman, I mean, yeah, Batman is recognizable, but Superman has always sort of been the face of DC Comics in the media, and, I mean, yeah, he might not have nearly as many cartoons as Batman has had over the past couple of years, but in general, he has more, you know, animated appearances than Batman does, I believe. And not just that, but most of the apparel, I mean, you'll find a lot more, at least in my own personal experience, you'll find a lot more Superman emblems on T-shirts by guys walking down a street than you will Batman emblems on T-shirts. And again, this might just be, you know, localized to New York, but yeah, I see my fair share of Batman, but I see a lot more of the Superman because
across age groups,
yes,
yeah,
yes.
I was thinking at first, I'm like, well, I see a lot of kids wearing Batman, but when I was thinking about your point, I'm like, it's true across age groups. You do tend to see more Superman merchandise being worn. Those two are a very tough call.
Yeah, it is.
I do think going off of a lot of Jim's points from earlier, I think if you had those same discussions with people that Jim was mentioning earlier, that makes an interesting case. If you were to take a look under Jim's parameters, I think, and I don't know, Jim, what do you think? I mean, because I'm kind of curious.
I do edge it to Superman, but you know, it's funny as my initial gut reaction was Superman. Then I started thinking about stuff with Batman, the concept of the utility belt. Non-comic book fans, they know about a utility belt, which comes from Batman. You know, the lurking, you know, the brooding hero lurking in the shadows. You know, they know about that type of stuff. Just the general criminals are a cowardly lot. People know that line that aren't comic book fans. And I don't know how they heard it. Maybe they saw a movie or saw a TV show or something where it was mentioned in there. But you know, there are definite stuff of Batman that has crossed over and dealing with other people. But because Superman is that positive dun-da-da kind of image, it's that golden boy image, I think that is what would give him the edge over Batman, because it's the brighter, the hope, the, you know, that the all the positiveness. And if you want to show a, you know, a positive image, you slap the big red S on their chest, you give them the cape, you have them bust the Superman pose, and it's you know, it's, there's more usage of a positive superhero image than a darker superhero image in the non-comic book medium.
Do you think a character, this is interesting, now that you guys are talking about this, I might be changing my answer actually from the beginning. Do you guys think these characters, is it more iconic if people can recognize visually the name of the character and their image or understand their story? Because I think when you talk about Superman and Batman, going off of a lot of Jim's argument right now, because I'm kind of soaking in what Jim's saying here, Jim's talking a lot about, people seem to understand from the way Jim's talking about it and the stories of Superman, the stories of Batman. Maybe not every little tiny detail like we do, but if you were to ask them about the overall concept of what Superman's deal is, mm-hmm. if you understand that kryptonite is his weakness and that he fights for truth and all this other stuff, and Batman's kind of deal of fighting character, I think people would be able to name perhaps some Batman villains. I don't think they would as easily be able to name, other than Lex Luthor, Superman villains. Lex Luthor, I think you would get – I'm not saying everybody who you would ask about Superman, because I do go under Jim's theories that it would go more with the dun-dun-dun, that kind of stuff. But I think the Batman 60s theme would be something that people would recognize, very similar to how I talked about the Spider-Man one, and we talk about the Superman theme music. But I think his story and some of his villains are a little bit more recognizable than perhaps Superman. But what do we consider iconic? Because I do think there is an edge – to Superman and Batman, to any of the characters we've talked about, as far as perhaps knowing their story.
I would say what makes it iconic to me is what shapes the company. You know, mm-hmm. what do you feel sets the standard for the company? You know, and yes, Superman has been around longer. So that's I think sort of the reason that I give him the edge there. But you could also very easily, I think, make the argument that over the past couple of years, I mean, when you compare to the pushes that have been made for Batman versus Superman, mm-hmm. that Batman could very well be the face of the DC universe. It's a difficult decision to make, really.
Yeah,
you know, I would say overall though, it's got to be Superman, because they went with Superman first. You know, he was the first animated character to come out. He was the first movie to make it big for DC, and his image is frickin' everywhere. And I'm not even talking about the Superman image itself. I'm talking about the symbol. That's sort of, I think, the reason that you see more Superman merchandise than you see Batman merchandise, because Batman's symbol has gone through a lot of changes over the years. Superman's yeah. symbol has basically been the same.
You know, it's gone through some tweaks, though. But I mean, yes,
basically been the same, and that's why I think it's been so easy to make merchandise for Superman, to make people go out there and you know, buy Superman stuff is because it's basically the same. But yeah, going with the story of Superman, and this could very well be the fault of DC, that they've sort of broadcasted that you don't even really need to know anything past Zod and Lex Luthor, because those are the only two villains that have ever really showed up in the major media outlets for Superman past the comic books, you know?
What do you think I guess what I'm getting at, though, because we're not talking about comic fans and what the company has broadcast as much as what does the average layperson know? Because Jim, am I understanding you right that that's what you're saying as far as your argument for Superman? Because I do think it's an interesting point that you're making. What does the average layperson know about these characters? Is that what makes them iconic? I mean, is that what we're – I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. Or
a short word answer, yes. That's okay. I think mm-hmm. if to be iconic, I think it has to reach beyond us. It has to reach beyond, you know, the comic book. And it's not even just understanding the story. It's understanding – the emotional theme and whatnot behind the characters. For example, people, you know, if anyone were to see a story where, you know, the hero as a kid watches their parents get killed and they come back and they're going to use that to fight against, you know, and become a hero, even the non-comic book fans will think back to Batman, because that's just a very famous thing as to how he became, why he is a hero. Now, he's not the first person to use that story, but I think he is made that story iconic, you know, because like Batman, he is a kid. He witnessed his parents' death and he's going to, you know, avenge and, you know, come back and, you know, and use that, you know, turmoil and whatnot. So I think that's the concept and understanding of who Batman is. People won't know the specifics. They won't know who Jason Todd is or who Tim Drake is, but they'll know the basics behind what makes Batman tick.
Mm-hmm. And Batman's story has been the generic standard for so many superheroes. As in, my parents have been killed, I must avenge them. My uncle has been killed, I must avenge him. My family has been killed, I must avenge them. my father has been killed, I must avenge them. It's set the standard. Batman's origins set the standard for a lot of different heroes out there, whether you're talking Marvel, whether you're talking Image, whether you're talking, you know, anything else, you're bound to see somewhere, blank was killed, I must seek vengeance.
I will say this, though. Going off of my wife's family, for example, with Batman, and my own experience growing up with Batman, I will say that the Batman we're seeing now in media and in the comics is not the same Batman that we would have witnessed in the 60s and early 70s, and actually through the 70s, except for the comics. You know, obviously the work of Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams started taking it a little bit more in the direction that we're seeing today. But in the media still, Batman was more of an adventurer, more of a straight-out superhero than perhaps what we're seeing today. And I don't know... I know, speaking for myself as a child growing up, if you had asked me what drives Batman, I don't know that I would have said it was the death of his parents as much as he's a good guy who's trying to do the right thing. I guess my point here being, I think Superman's story has been pretty consistent all the way through. I think Batman's has too, but the emphasis on what psychologically the parents' death has done to Batman, I think has taken a much darker turn, a more psychological turn in recent years. And when I say recent years, we were talking about the 80s, you know, with things like Dark Knight Returns and Year One and stuff like that, where it started to take an even darker turn than it, perhaps even what Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams were doing, where they did start maturing the character and headed down that path. But we're definitely seeing, if you look at the old Brave and the Bolds and some of the stuff that's being reprinted, for example, in Showcase right now, Batman's very different in those books than he is today.
And you compare that to Superman, where he's basically been the same over the years. I mean, you know, yes, there have been subtle changes, like, for instance, where he works or you know, the people in his life. But he's always sort of always been truth, justice, American way, rinse, repeat.
But the things like the – I think with Batman, I think the average person – a Batmobile is very recognizable to the average person. I think the Batcave is recognizable to the average person, whereas I think things like the Fortress of Solitude, that's going to be a little mixed. I think each one has certain elements to them that are going to be deeply recognizable to the average person and other things not so much so. Those are interesting characters.
Well, and if you go into the supporting cast a little bit, I mean, and you know, talking about what we sort of have been touching on a little bit, how much of the story do people know? For Superman, yeah, they know Lois, they know Clark, they know Lex, yada yada yada. For Spider-Man, you know, they know Peter, they probably know at least a little bit. They know that he had an uncle at least, even if they don't know that his name is Ben. They probably know that he has a girlfriend slash wife named Mary Jane. And they know that his major villain is Green Goblin. I don't know how long they've known this, whether that's, you know, just the movies that have made people know this or whether or not people knew that ahead of time. That's up for debate. But when you look at Superman and you look at Batman, they've got at least four or five different people in their supporting cast you can probably point to that the layman will know. Can you say that for the Hulk?
No, I would agree. I would totally agree with where you're going on that. I guess one other one for Spider-Man, just because we went on it. I think Jonah is pretty recognizable as well.
No, you're right.
Yep. Newspaper strips, things like that, cartoons, media. He's a character that tends to appear. I don't think every layperson's going to know all the Superman supporting cast or the Spider-Man supporting cast that we just rattled off. Mm-hmm. But I do think more people outside of the comic book audience would be aware of perhaps a Jonah Jameson, the same way that they would be. I don't want to put Lois in there because I think Lois is a lot more recognizable. Yeah. But
not even Lana Lang because of Smallville, but let's say maybe even Pete because he was only in the first two seasons. So
sure,
you know
what I would say is Lois Lane well over Mary Jane because I think you know people know the name Lois Lane, they don't know the name Mary Jane unless they've seen the movie. If you're not really into the movie, I wouldn't say that the average everyday person would know who Mary Jane is.
Both of those people that saw the film.
right, exactly.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
It's two people. But, there are some people
that know that Mary Jane is, but they think it's something else.
Right.
But actually,
here's the thing, though. Jim, J. Jonah over Perry White is what I would say.
Yes.
But actually, the other point we have to make here, though, is yes, while a ton of people saw the Spider-Man film, a ton of people saw the Superman films in the 70s, we're also talking about people who maybe haven't seen either. So that is something that should be a part of this discussion if we're talking about iconic. If we're looking at them, what is identifiable about these characters universally? And I do think that there are elements of these characters that are identifiable to people who've never seen these movies at all. I guess the hard part is determining what do we see as iconic? What does this word mean?
Right.
Because I can see it, like, the more I'm thinking about what Jim's saying, and part of the reason why I said discount like the movies for a second, going off a part of what Jim was saying there before, there is some validity in taking a look at what are the individual character qualities.
No, you're absolutely right. And
this is an incredibly interesting discussion.
Oh yeah, well, and I mean me bringing up the Hulk, you know, saying that the you know who do you know other than the Hulk? But then again, Hulk wants to be alone.
Yeah,
that's his character trait. You know, I mean, are you supposed to know anybody other than the Hulk?
The Captain America thing is really interesting that you guys brought up because I guess I never saw Captain America, and I'm talking as a comic fan, as a extremely recognizable character. I think he's a great character. I think he's a great character concept, but I never put him
on that upper echelon.
No. Huh. And that's the funny part. In the media, like the connections you guys were making with him in the media, I'm not saying you're wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that was my experience. I'm very curious to see what like listener reaction is going to be spinning out of this because I think that's a very interesting discussion point. Maybe there's a lot more. You know, you guys were both adamant about it, which means you both had very similar experiences with it. So, you know, that says a lot in and of itself. The fact that you both were so similar in your experiences of it.
Well, I think it might also stem from that. Before I was reading comic books, I knew about Captain America. You know,
right. And that makes a very valid point. That's why I was surprised by that. I found that incredibly interesting because I didn't expect that.
Well, sometimes we surprise you.
Yeah. No, and I like that about this discussion. Actually, there's a there's another DC character because we've done three Marvel. I'd like to add another DC character to the mix.
You want to add in Wonder Woman? Because well, after all, DC does have a Trinity. So I assume that both of you guys would agree that she is definitely on that third list for DC.
Yeah, she's an interesting character as far as when you talk about being iconic and recognizable. I think she is somebody who, if you were to ask people to name a female superhero, they could name Wonder Woman. I do think that there isn't as universal an understanding of who she is. I think people might be more familiar with the concept of the bracelets, certainly what the outfit looks like because it's a rather iconic outfit. I mean, they're talking about something like that. That's a great example of where iconic means that people universally know what the outfit looks like. Mm-hmm. I think that's been all over the media.
Oh, yeah.
But if you were to ask people, like, what is Wonder Woman's story? How does she operate? I think that's where there's going to be a lot more of a gray area because she's not as accessible in the media. People who saw the Linda Carter show are going to know her. If people saw Super Friends are going to know her. But if you don't fall into that category, I think people might know that she's got a lasso. I think there's been enough spoof satire of the Invisible Jet that you might get some people who don't read or haven't been through those experiences who might be aware of that concept. But I don't think there's going to be as big of an understanding of her as the others. But definitely, I think she is the most iconic female hero. I mean, I think people, that's the one universally people are going to recognize.
My 12-year-old cousin can draw Wonder Woman just from, like, memory. Just because that her look is so recognizable. She's like, hey, draw Wonder Woman for me. And she'll draw you Wonder Woman in like 5 minutes and have every part of her outfit correct, color included. I mean, so, yeah, just her outfit is so recognizable. I mean, that's what really stands out to me. I mean, I'm up until a couple years ago, really not knowing a lot about Wonder Woman, I still knew what Wonder Woman looked like. Mm-hmm. You know, you could point her out. So I mean, that's what stands out to me. And then me being like really into mythology, I mean, that I think that's what really drew me in to her character. It's like, oh yeah, I know about that, and I know about that, and so I can automatically say, you know, when Ares shows up in her books, you know, I can make that connection.
Well, do you feel that her story is accessible to the average Joe or the average Josephine, as it were?
See, I think that's where it gets to be a little tricky for some people, because I think if it's too rooted in mythology, I think there's a lot of people that don't know, you know, the backstory, you know, the background for the mythology. And that can sometimes, I think, put people off. You know, it's like, oh, I don't know anything about that, and maybe makes the story a little more complicated and harder to understand for them. So, right. You know, that might be, you know, why, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, her place within the Trinity and why she isn't as popular as Batman and Superman. And I think that, you know, could have something to do with it. That some of that isn't as accessible as, you know, Kansas Farm Boy or, you know, boy whose parents were killed.
Right. But at least DC actually has a female iconic character.
Yes.
Because, I mean, when you look at Marvel, they might have females that are prominent at one point or another, but I certainly wouldn't say that they have a iconic female superhero.
Right. Exactly.
And I mean, they're missing out there. I mean, they're missing out on an entire part of the market with that. I mean, you would think that by now they would have learned their lesson and tried to go out there and catch everybody as opposed to just the dudes.
Right. I mean, I think that's one of the things, you know, when I was starting to get into comic books, I was, you know, I started out reading Superman and I started out reading trades and everything, but you know, I actually had a friend of mine is like, oh, you should be reading Wonder Woman. And I'm like, I don't know, you know. But the minute I started picking it up, and I'm like, why haven't I been reading this all along? You know, because, I mean, there's definitely, you know, parts is like, hey, this is a chick, you know. that's doing all this. And you know, there is a level of familiarity. You know, there are, you know, things that Diana deals with that you can relate to in some ways, being female. So it's like, yeah, I've been there before. So let's see how she deals with it. So, yeah, I think that is something that Marvel is probably missing out on by not having someone, you know, at that level that would appeal to, you know, females as well.
I will. You know, it's funny, as you guys are talking about this, I will say this because I really think Wonder Woman is really the major recognizable iconic hero, with the exception of, I would say, Supergirl is probably up there too, because you do see a lot of, I think for a lot of what Jim said before about Superman and you know, his iconic, I think Supergirl merchandise and Supergirl, I don't think people understand Supergirl as a character, but I think as if we go under costume, I think people are aware that right. There is a Supergirl. I don't think that they know much of anything about her, though, yeah. Beyond that. Same thing with Batgirl. I think you can make the same argument for Batgirl. I will say it's something where I do think the comic companies have improved, though. If you do look at Marvel has got a wealth of very cool female superhero characters. Totally agreeing with Ian's point that we don't have a single iconic female that comes out of that batch, but I think there's a lot of strong characters in that batch. I don't know what the answer is to one of them sticking. On DC's end, you could actually make the same argument other than Wonder Woman. And even arguably the Wonder Woman one, I think, is a character who I'd love to see more of in the media outside of that. I'd like to see a Wonder Woman film because I do think she's a character who everyone knows her costume. Everyone knows little tidbits about maybe that she has a lasso and the bracelets and stuff just because they've seen them so many times. But I don't think people know much else about her story. And I do think that that's where the ball's being dropped, even with Wonder Woman, as far as getting her out there into the media, because I do think Wonder Woman's story compared to any of the male heroes we have mentioned earlier has – I think that there's an untapped market or an untapped understanding mm-hmm. of this rich character who has been in the public eye for so long that people don't understand. It actually – I'll make the same argument. My issue with Captain America is the same as my issue with Wonder Woman when we're talking about this, is that I think that people have a lot greater understanding of Batman and Superman and Spider-Man than they do. And I'll even throw the Hulk maybe perhaps in where we're talking about Wonder Woman and Captain America right now. As far as understanding the overall story, I don't think those characters are as understood. I think Peter Parker's story and Bruce Wayne's story and Clark Kent's story is a lot more understood universally.
I would agree with that. I think that if the Thor movie does well, I would say we see a Wonder Woman movie within the next 5 years.
One could hope.
Mostly because of mythology is a bit difficult for some of the masses to get. You've got the Lord of the Rings nuts, and you've got the mythology fans out there, but a lot of the movie companies and even the comic book companies don't think to a certain extent that mythology can sell. And if Thor does achieve what it's going to do, and it makes millions, and it becomes past just a niche market, then Wonder Woman might actually have that chance, because DC's going to have to do something to compete with all these Marvel movies in the public eye, and Wonder Woman certainly could be a way to do that, to specifically differentiate itself from what Marvel is doing.
The thing with Wonder Woman, I've had a lot of times at work, people will make the mistake of asking me, hey, what's new with comics? Or they'll ask me something about a character, and I'll just go on a long diatribe of which more than what they want to know.
And you? Nah.
Yeah. I know. It's kind of hard to believe that I would do that. But a couple times people have asked me about Wonder Woman and what's her deal and this and that. And, usually they'll make some funny comment about, hey, are they dating Superman or something like that? And I'll go into detail on how she, was made out of clay and this and that and the whole thing. And every time I talk about her origin, nobody has any even really? That completely throws them. Now, they all know about the magic lasso, and they know about the bracelets, and they always ask about the invisible jet, if that's around, and, can she fly, or does she need the jet, and that type of stuff. But her whole origin and the fact of the mythology and just the gods and all that, no one has any clue on that.
I teach mythology. I mean, that's one of the units that we do in freshman English. And last year I had a big map that had all the, different locales, I guess, of, ancient Greece and everything, and, all the different events that happened, and Themyscira is on there, and I was like, oh, look, it's Themyscira, and they're like, what's so special about that? And I said, that's where Wonder Woman's from, and and everybody in that class was just like, really? Didn't know that. And it was like, yeah, that's where Wonder Woman's from. And I said, no, not really. But of course, they all believed me, and I was like, Wonder Woman really existed or something. But I said, well, in the comic books, yes, that's where Wonder Woman's from, is Themyscira. And they're like, what else in there is from Wonder Woman? And I was like, oh, there's, they talked about Athena and Ares. And I'm like, you get all that in a Wonder Woman comic. And they're like, huh, and it's just like this new level of interest. And I was like, see, I could get them to read Wonder Woman.
Gil Simone is a very good writer. We promise. We promise.
Oh, yes.
I'll
hail.
I definitely promise that.
Well,
I'm a little sick in my worship, but
and don't forget, not only did they talk about Themyscira in Wonder Woman comics, but they also talk about Cleveland.
Yes.
Yes, Sir Thomas of Cleveland.
Yes.
Lost moments in comic timing history.
Yo, Sean.
Hey, what's up? How you doing, man?
Not bad, man.
Hello.
So you want your opinionated self in on this action?
You know, I'll step in for a while. You got me for about 50 minutes.
That's fine with me. That's fine with me. Well, we got
Sean, my brother from another mother. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up? How you doing, man? Hey, Wood.
What's up, player?
Hey, doing good, man. Doing real good. Nice to actually talk to you.
Absolutely. You too.
Wait, for once, I'm not the only black guy on the show. Awesome.
Well, I mean, I may look white, but I'm black too. I'm a black man in white man's skin.
I'm living in a black neighborhood. Does that count?
I saw a black guy once.
No, that's funny.
Living in Minnesota, is that as close as you can get, Patrick?
That's, you know, I saw one on TV, and yeah, it was. But actually, it turned out it was Robert Downey Jr., so it doesn't really count.
Oh, damn!
I got a little Afrocentric love trivia for you.
Okay.
Missy Elliott lives down the street from me.
Really?
Get out of here!
Yeah.
Really?
So what's her address so I can stalk her?
She's never here.
What is in her garbage?
I don't know. But she is never around. If she's ever around, she like sneaks in like a ninja because we never, the lights are never on or anything. But
when she gets around the house, she gets around the house.
Well, it is her primary residence supposedly, but I mean, she's here sometimes, but I'm saying it's not very common, and she's not one for the. She doesn't saunter down to the block parties or anything like that.
Oh, she's stuck up.
Although her purple Lamborghini is often parked out front, which is kind of funny.
It's funny. Bill Cosby lives in my neighborhood also.
Wait, who?
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby? Really?
Oh, Cos. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. He lives, like, out in the rich part of my neighborhood. Like, yeah, I know.
And you live in the poor part?
Can it be the same neighborhood if it's a poor part and a rich part? Would that kind of make
There's
it
literally one railroad track going through his building.
I live in the lofty part of the area.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You know what? Fuck it. We're starting this episode without Raph, and whenever he's good to go, then he can be on.
Are you sure we have enough people?
You know, I don't think so. Well, we're gonna have six once Raph is on, and if Juan wants to join in, I think we might actually break Skype. But let's.
I was gonna say. Well, the six is actually surprisingly good for.
And
yeah. Well,
before we start.
Yes, Mr. Pryor, is there something you'd like to address the class?
To the brother that knows Bill Cosby or has seen Bill Cosby down the street on the rich side of the neighborhood, if you see him, tell him that I said Leonard Part 6 is fucking awesome. Besides that, that's all I'm going to say.
And if you ever see him, tell him to show me the Jell-O pudding.
Oh, you know what? I got a conspiracy theory about the Jell-O pudding commercials with Bill Cosby. You know, see, back in the day, you know, he did all those Jell-O commercials and he did all those Jell-O pudding commercials. Mm-hmm. And then he becomes a star. Oh, no, not that he wasn't a star, but he becomes an uber star with the Cosby Show. And Jell-O was like, how can we fuck with Bill Cosby? How can we fuck with him? They said, I got an idea. We're going to sell watermelon Jell-O, put him in a watermelon striped suit, and have him rapping about watermelon Jell-O. I still haven't forgotten that shit. Never.
Sean, you make every episode so happy.
John,
Sean's such a polite guy, and he comes on your show and he sounds like Angry Man.
But see, Wood, there's a reason why I'm like this on Ian's show, and like everywhere else, I'm just real calm and collective. Mm-hmm. Ian always finds a way, finds a way to set me off. Always. And I mean, and he doesn't mean to do it, but like he must know like all my trigger words or something like that, and it's just like boom.
Let's see. Bologna. Knife. Washington Irving. And no, I'm just gonna keep like spouting random things out, man, and hope that it somehow sets you off.
Oh no! When you said when we started talking about Superman Returns, and you brought up real estate again. That's all it took. That's all.
You know what? I was actually pumping my fist in my car when you were going off on that little soliloquy because I felt the same way. I thought that it was probably the stupidest plot ever created. I mean, I was at a Kevin Smith thing one time where he was there and he showed Chasing Amy, and then he came and answered questions, and it was right when he was trying to get the land the Superman gig. Uh-huh. And he was talking about how, you know, the whole thing had blown up and that they didn't like his script, and at the, you know, he was talking about the polar bear script that was still that, you know, that they were trying to get done. And I was thinking, you know, as I'm watching fucking Superman Returns, I'm thinking polar bears would have been better than this.
Yes.
It would have been
a
better movie than this. It really would have
been.
Oh,
much better.
Oh, Raph, you missed the conversation about your favorite movie.
Dark Knight, Superman Returns.
Superman Returns.
Oh, Superman Returns.
Yeah. It's the greatest movie to have ever been made. It deserved every single Oscar nomination.
Sweet mother of Jesus, do not ever say that again while I'm on this phone.
And people wonder why I want to choke Raph when I'm in person with him. He just does stuff like that.
I'm going to change my answer from the beginning, because I did kind of cop out in the beginning. So I'm going to say it's pretty close, though. I guess kind of going off of where our discussion's gone right now, I would say which company has more of the iconic characters. I would say DC, but I think it's 2-1 in the sense that I think Superman and Batman, because I would say on the Marvel end, it's Spider-Man. It's those three characters that I'm looking at least by where our conversation's gone. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got the 2-1, so it's very close still. I think what's kind of interesting to me, I don't know if you guys are interested in discussing this, is I think we're talking a lot about potential now, where we're kind of heading off on this, and we're looking at a lot of characters who I think have the potential to be more recognizable. Mm-hmm. Through Ian, you were just talking about movies, and I do think that that's somewhere where Marvel, I think, has been kicking some serious booty.
Oh yeah,
has been in. I think Marvel, as far as getting brand recognition and trying out character concepts to see what sticks and what people might be interested in, and really trying to get people aware of these characters. I think this is something that has been a strength of Marvel's that I think DC's taking notice of, and I think all of us as comic fans are going to benefit from where Marvel, the direction where Marvel went in taking their film studios under their reins. I think that they've kind of done a really good job now of spreading out and getting people more aware of their characters. What do you guys think, though, from just across comics, what are potential characters that you think have the potential to be iconic characters like a Superman, Batman, or Spider-Man?
Brightest days and blackest night, baby. Yeah, you know, I think Green Lantern definitely has the iconic, you know, potential. If not, there may even be some people who will try to argue, who will argue that he's already reached iconic level. But I wouldn't give him that. He's
wouldn't either.
Yeah, I wouldn't give him. But there will. I know people listening to this right now are saying, "What? He's already iconic?" And he's definitely on the way up. And it's not only that, I think the concept of the core even is going to be something that, you know, people will appreciate more than just Hal Jordan. Just the concept of this international, intergalactic police force out there. And then these cool power rings that can, you know, they can will it to, you know, do whatever they want. Oh, that's kind of a neat idea, you know. And because there are people who know, who really don't know comics, who probably know about the Green Lanterns, who probably know about the Yellow Weakness. And they may laugh, say, that's kind of lame, a Yellow Weakness? Come on, why is that? Without knowing the whole backstory behind the weakness. But, you know, it's he's already out there. And same thing with the Flash. People definitely know about the Speedster. They know about the Flash. They don't know anything about him. They don't know about Barry, Wally, Bart, or any of the other Speedsters. But the concept behind the super fast speedster who's dressed in red and, you know, a red blur and lightning type thing. They know these type of things.
Wolverine is, we haven't talked about him definitely. At all. I don't know, unless people have seen the X-Men movies or the Wolverine movies, but as far as being in video games, being the costumes all over the place, whether you dress up as Wolverine or not, people are aware that there is a superhero character or some form of comic book character running around with claws. I think those claws are a very iconic image that people are, out of the X-Men, visually the most recognizable. Definitely. Right now in the public eye.
Oh, yeah.
The Hugh Jackman film, people have seen the trailers, things like that. So I do think it's a character who's very recognizable now.
Well, I want out of Marvel, more than anything, other than Thor, what I already talked about, but give me something to make the Fantastic Four the icons as they should be. You know, because I mean, they are Marvel's first family, and yet they don't really get that status past comic book fans. You know, I mean, and yes, they are a group versus a singular character, but I think that if Marvel played their cards right and actually, you know, marketed them a little bit more, you know, possibly like, hey, kids, there's the Human Torch all over again, like what they used to. And, you know, the Thing has always been popular with both kids and adults. But you got to sell Reed and Sue a little bit more, I think, as that, you know, perfect couple to maybe get even the date guys in. And you could probably get Fantastic Four to that next echelon. It would take a lot, and it would probably take a brand new set of movies to do that, but they've been talking about that, but I want them there.
X-Men's on the cusp, too, not just Wolverine. I would say, you know, X-Men's one of those things that it's a concept that I think just universally works. I think it is something that people can relate to. I think it's a series that's in need of a relaunch.
Yeah.
Because I think that relaunch would benefit the series. I think they are cool characters. The first two movies in particular, I did like the first two movies. I think the third movie I enjoyed seeing in the theater. It's when I look back at the third one, though, I'm kind of like, oh boy, they kind of fell off on the third one as far as being a movie that I would universally recommend to anybody. But I did enjoy the first two movies. But I do think that there's a potential to take those movies to the level of some of the great comic book movies, like an Iron Man, for example, mm-hmm. which I thought Iron Man was a movie that so brilliantly captured what's so cool about the Tony Stark concept. And that's a character. Iron Man's a character who I think has the potential to become an icon based on how they've made that character cool in the media.
Right.
I think merchandising wise, it's another character who they've done. Marvel's done a great job of getting that branding out beyond just the film, beyond just the comics. There's costumes, there's shirts and things like that, that I think are becoming more visible. I would agree with your guys' assessment earlier that is he an icon now? Not by what seems to be where our definition is gone. But I do think that's a character who could be on the cusp, similar to what Jim, I think, is talking about with Green Lantern. Iron Man, I will say right now, Iron Man's more recognizable, in my opinion, than Green Lantern and the Flash by the layman because of the film.
Hey, well, you know who's iconic? Ryan Reynolds, because he's been in Marvel and DC at this point.
Right.
Oh boy, and Mandy's gone again, so I might as well just outro her on the show here because I don't want to bother her too much because I know that she had to leave anyway. So I want to thank Mandy for being on the show, and we'll give full props to her column and everything once we're all said and done here on the episode. But yeah, it's just us boys at this point, so we'll finish up here a little bit with that. So Jim, you do think that Green Lantern has that chance of actually getting to that next echelon? I mean, would it take a successful movie to do that, you think?
I think they're doing it right now because, mm-hmm. you know, it's with the currently going on in Blackest Night, it's getting, you know, kudos outside of the comic book realm.
Sure.
And,
sure.
you know, just, you know, Geoff Johns in alone is starting to become a name that non-comic book people are going to recognize eventually. Mm-hmm. And I think by having that recognition going that way, you can pull in people to the Green Lantern, you know, because he's already is known by the layman's. Well, the basic concept behind the Green Lantern is known. So once you have that basic concept, you can start introducing this, put it out there. So I definitely think a good movie would do it. I think with their current path, they're going along with, you know, these, you know, big epic events happening inside the Green Lantern universe itself. So, and it's, yeah, I definitely think we can see in a little while, we'll see iconic Green Lantern. I don't know if it'll be Hal Jordan, iconic character, or just the concept of the Green Lantern Corps.
I would also say don't underestimate the power of – this is part of the major problem of a good video game mm-hmm. that would go along with the movies. And I mean a good one. There's Spider-Man has had some marvelous video games. There's been a couple of them that kind of fell off. Batman, you could say the same thing. There's been some great video games. There's been some ones that we'd like to forget. But superhero video games, part of the problem is, like, Arkham Asylum, the recent released one, is brilliant game. Spider-Man's had some brilliant games. I'd love to see more. The gaming audience nowadays, even more than films, is a way for characters to become recognizable. Mm-hmm. And that multi-billion-dollar industry right now is another – an interactive entertainment is a way for these characters to reach new levels. But they got to be good.
that's why I think Marvel is probably along the right track with games like Ultimate Alliance, because you're not just focusing on one character there.
No.
You're focusing on a lot of different characters. And if you want to try and get yourself a female icon, then that might be one of the ways to do it.
Sure.
By getting a character that shines in the video game sector. And then gets yourself back out there. Then again, you could also say that perhaps Spider-Woman is going that route because, with the motion comic and with the push that they seem to be making with her in the Marvel Universe right now, maybe they're hoping that she'll be it. You know, Spider-Woman, Spider-Man could have the same sort of effect as Supergirl, Superman, because you've got that spider in its name already. So
the Spider-Girl motion Spider-Woman motion comic is very, very good too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have the first one on my computer. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but I haven't said the full thing. What it did prove to me though is that I had no idea she was British.
that's a good point.
Yeah. After all this time of seeing Spider-Woman in comics and everything, not once did I know that she was British.
Mm-hmm.
Until seeing that, so go figure. But let's change tracks a little bit. I mean, we've been doing Marvel, we've been doing DC a little bit. Yeah, okay, mostly. But let's talk about what do you think is your underdog when it comes to iconic characters? What company do you feel has iconic characters that not everybody might even realize have iconic characters at this point? And we'll go with Jim on this first.
Gee, thanks.
you're welcome, because I knew that you wouldn't have an answer.
I have no answer on this one. This is a good one.
You want to have Sean go first, and then we'll go back?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Sean, go ahead.
Well, I think a lot of the – I don't know if I want to limit that to a company as far as – I think there's a lot of independent concepts.
Okay.
That are on the cusp of breaking through, very similar to our discussions we were just having about characters like Green Lantern. I think Jeff Smith's Bone, for example, has reached beyond just being an independent comic. It has been republished now by Scholastic and is in schools all over the place. It's a book that I will be in shock if this doesn't make some kind of film or some kind of animated series or some kind of – I mean it's – kind of a no-brainer,
right,
that this has got to appear in another media. I think there is going to be something iconic out of that. Then that's something that's going to grow out of the comic, and I think it's – the story's just too good to not – and if somebody doesn't do that, they're crazy. So I think that's one that's on the cusp. The one I'm particularly interested in – you want to talk about underdogs or at least interesting concepts? Marvel's acquisition of Miracle Man / Marvel Man, mm-hmm, with reprints of that is – for anybody that hasn't read it, when Marvel reprints this, buy it. You're crazy if you don't. It's brilliant. It is so good. It is not hype for anybody that you've heard say that. It is that good. And if they have if they find good writers who are continue that concept and keep it going, that has the potential to be something that could. You know, if they're smart enough to take that concept and branch that out into film or animation or something like that, it has the potential to be like a sleeper hit if done right. Mm-hmm. And that's why when we talk about underdogs, that's a lot of that hedges on how right it's done, because I think the concept is so cool that it could reach beyond it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Miracle Man is basically Shazam with an edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why I think that could definitely do it there, because most people make fun of you know, Captain Marvel / Shazam as being like the Boy Scout, but you know, Miracle Man / Marvel Man, yeah, not so much.
It's stuff like Fables, Powers, Terry Moore's work. Mm-hmm. A lot of that stuff has the potential to go beyond the medium, I think.
Yeah.
I think it naturally lends itself to kind of branch out into other media. And I think that is the key. What makes a character iconic? Well, it has to explode beyond just one medium. Yeah. It has to be something that people can see visibly in other places and hear other people talking about in ways that you wouldn't expect. And I think these are they are concepts that have the potential to explode out. Things like the spirit. I was so sad that that movie missed its mark.
Oh, that was the funniest movie I saw that year.
But I mean, that's part of the problem. The core concept of the spirit, the historical significance of the spirit, it's so cool that I think it, you know, that's historically you'd like to see at their Cerebus is something that I don't know that it'll ever reach that beyond the comic status, but certainly a landmark for it. What do you guys think of Spawn? Because I think Spawn has branched out. I don't think it quite has reached the iconic status, but what do you guys see that as having potential?
That was going to be my choice, actually, because I was basically going to say the Image / Wildstorm universe, mostly because when they were the same thing, I mean, I know that now, obviously, Wildstorm is owned by DC, and that's a little bit different, but characters like Spawn and Wildcats and even to an extent Stormwatch and stuff like that weren't just limited to the comic sphere for a while there. I mean, yeah, Wildcats had a cartoon that while it may not have been nearly as well known as some of the other ones out there, it did get a decent amount of airtime back in its day. Savage Dragon as well. I think that mostly if you focus on Spawn and Savage Dragon, Image is probably the underdog that I would pick there. But with Spawn, you've got merchandising, you've got a movie, you've got a new movie that's going to be coming out, whether it's animated or whether it's CGI or whether it's live action, I'm not sure of. No one really is at this point, but it's going to happen. You've got animation to go with it, and you've got successful toys. So those are all the right bases to be hitting on when it comes to Spawn. So I would definitely be there. I'd like to see Savage Dragon, actually, maybe get into the movie realm as well, and perhaps maybe. I mean, I think that could be a lot bigger than it currently is. I think that's another underdog that could very well be there. But definitely, Spawn and Savage Dragon would be my picks for that.
Savage Dragon would generate well into an action film because he naturally lends himself to one-liners and that kind of storytelling approach that he could, if it was written really close to the comic book, would translate very well to the big screen.
Definitely.
Here, I got two ideas here.
Okay.
What about I'm actually kind of serious here, so I'm not completely joking. You know, what about their Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I had a feeling that was going to be your answer. I had a feeling.
You know, do you consider – you know what? I honestly, taking the joking out of that, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are pretty recognizable.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how much of a joke you're throwing out there because are very recognizable.
When I first thought of throwing them out there, I was kind of joking. But then I started – as you guys were talking, I was thinking more and more about it. I'm like, you know, you look at when the Turtles are first original Turtle comics. It wasn't the Cowabunga Dude type. It was more of a edge to it. There was a little bit more, you know, darker comedy. These were, you know, Turtles they were killing people. They were killing the ninjas and all that type of stuff. So there was a little bit darker twist to the Turtles. And then as it's gone on, people know and recognize these, you know, the Turtles, and they can actually, you can probably find people who can probably name them. You know, so I think it's, you know, I'm the more I think about it, the more I'm like, you know, this is kind of a serious, they could be actually considered an underdog, not mainstream type, you know, icon.
And they've had multiple iterations and all of them have been successful. I mean, they've had successful video games. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle arcade game is to this day one of my favorite side-scrollers that I've ever played, and it's still big today. I mean, it's on Xbox Live Marketplace, I know, for download, so there's another way for you to get it. You still see the apparel all over the place. The cartoons, I mean, we were talking about this off-air, and I'll probably air in the back of the episode, but if you haven't seen Turtles Forever yet, that is fantastic. I mean, it'll take you back to your youth, but at the same time, it's a way for people to understand just how far and how wide-reaching the Turtles have been over the years. That they've had their light side and they've had their dark side, and people know both of them. And most importantly, think of how much the pizza enterprise has benefited off of the Turtles. I'm serious. When I say it, according to my parents, I did not like pizza until I started watching the Turtles. I was like 5 years old, but it's apparently how that went down. When I started watching the Turtles, that's all I would talk about: pizza, 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 pizza. So
that's not so odd though, because a lot of children's television, and it's actually there's been laws that have been put into place now to prevent a lot of advertising to go along with children's television, because that's how we were raised. A lot of it did. I'm not saying that was the purpose of the Turtles. That was something that was in Turtles mythos beforehand.
Yeah.
But that is something that television has targeted certain commercials to tie in with certain cartoons and programs relating to it to get kids to buy merchandise, and that would include certain foods and treats and things like that relating to it. That's funny. It's very true.
I mean, think of how many like random like snacks you've eaten over the years. You know, like Teddy Grahams with you know, pictures of JLU guys on it, or like I know that I actually own at least one box of Pokemon mac and cheese. You know all this stuff that's out there that I'm sure that at least one strange snack product can be mentioned by all of us that we've done because of the iconic characters that have told us to buy them.
It was funny. I was at my grocery store trying to get Pokemon mac and cheese, and I went to go grab it off the shelf, and I saw this. They threw it into a box, a case, with your address on it.
Hey, I got it for free.
Well, honestly, I had Hulk Hogan chewable vitamins.
Ooh, yeah. Good brother. And did it keep you strong?
Hey, you know, it's the three commandments of Hulkamania, man. Work hard, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, baby.
And the three commandments of Macho Man. Ooh, yeah, snap into a Slim Jim.
Either wrestling related or Batman related. I probably – any product – I remember WWF ice cream bars, stuff like that. I was a sucker for all that nonsense. If it had a Batman label on it you know, totally taking back, you know, what you were talking about with the mac and cheese and stuff like that. Mm. If it had a Batman shape on it or somehow was related to Batman, I would grab it in an instant. I mean, it was, you know, I was a sucker for that kind of stuff. And I mean, it's the truth of, you know, and that is another way that characters become iconic. It is merchandising. I think we've hit on that probably with every example that we had. At some point in time, merchandising did tie into it.
Oh, yeah. No, no question. And you know, the other franchise that I wanted to mention real quick, and I'm wondering if you guys agree with this or not. What about Hellboy?
That is an interesting one, because I thought both films were good. Mm-hmm. I do think it's a character franchise. Could that one become iconic?
Yeah.
At least by our definition of iconic.
Right.
Or will it remain like kind of a cool underground
thing? I think it'll remain cult.
Yeah.
Kind of like Crow, where I think there'll always be a cult audience for that as well.
Yeah.
Because they're relaunching the Crow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I think it kind of falls – I think that one kind of falls in that category. And that's not taking anything – I love Hellboy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just whether or not it could ever be an icon or not. Because, I mean, it's had the animated, but it's only been straight to DVD. It's never had an actual, you know – Saturday morning cartoon show or anything like that anybody could watch, and I doubt it ever would due to the subject matter. But mostly the fact that it has the word hell in it, I'm sure that there's a bunch of people in the in certain parts of the country that would go nuts if that was ever on TV. You know, they'd probably change it to Heck Boy for all we know. But I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, because I mean, I know plenty of people that know Hellboy off the top of their tongue. I just don't know if they'll still know it 5 years from now.
It's good enough to certainly do that, but I think there's some limitations.
Well, I think it
targets a certain audience. I'm sorry, Jim.
I think Ian hit the nail on the head when he said, you know, there will be people who will, with Hellboy, the fact that it's Hellboy, mm-hmm. you know, that it's in the name, and there's definite. you know, satanic and demonic type references, and it's very strong conservative parts of this country who I wouldn't even see them changing it to Heck Boy. I'd see them wanting to change to Big Red or something like that, even completely.
Then you can market gum with them.
Right. You know? That's the same thing like with Spawn. We talked about Spawn before.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a big thing that would fight Spawn just because of that same, you know, there is a strong conservative movement in America who does not want this type of references, you know, out there and readily accessible to young children.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's not really going to change. That's why things like Superman are able to become icons, because there's nothing hellish about Superman. He's super, and he's a man. That's it. You know, I mean, there's just certain. I mean, I guess there's just certain qualities that you need to have, or not exactly need to have, but most of the time you have to become an icon. Because, well, I mean, let's be honest, Wolverine sort of breaks that stereotype, because he is pretty iconic, and you know, he slashes things up left and right, but. You know, I guess he might be the one exception to the rule, or Batman.
Well, it's even like when you look at Batman. Even, yeah, he is, you know, the shadows and the Dark Knight and that, but he does have his code where he doesn't kill.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that could be something that could hold back Wolverine from reaching a solid iconic level. Now.
If you think Wolverine's Batman,
Wolverine's very popular and a wonderful character, and you guys know Wolverine really brought me into the game kind of and comic book reading. So I'm not knocking the guy, but I think there could be something hold that, you know, the fact that he does get nasty, that he does gut people, could hold him back from reaching a iconic level.
You guys are forgetting, though, like with Batman and Wolverine both, their animated features are different than what you're talking about. We talk about Batman sticking to the shadows. Mm-hmm. A Batman on the Brave and the Bold cartoon, for example. Or actually, aside from Batman the Animated Series, if you take a look at Batman in any of his animated appearances outside of that particular series, mm-hmm. He hasn't been the dark, shadowy figure. At least he'll play on the stealth thing and all that, but he's not the dark, shadowy figure that you would see in a Batman Begins or a Dark Knight. Wolverine, for example, in some of his cartoon appearances, not the first X-Men animated series was a little bit closer to the comics, but some of the later ones were a little bit more accessible of a character than what you see in the comics, even, or in the films. So I do think, and Batman's certainly much more out of the two. As far as when you're talking about that conservative friendly character, Batman would fit that mark in his animated appearances. But Wolverine is toned down a bit for animation.
Would you say the same thing about Wolverine and the X-Men? I mean, yeah, he is the lead character, so of course you're gonna have to make some changes, but he can still be pretty gruesome on that.
That's true. That's true. I was thinking more of things like X-Men Evolution, for example. I didn't think he was quite as dark there.
No, you're right. You're right. Well, that's also because he wasn't the main focus.
Right.
You know, and he was brought onto the show later also. You got to remember that.
Yeah, that's true as well. So, I mean, that could be part of the it is interesting to see these characters. And Batman's definitely a better example out of the two.
No, you're
where his animated appearances are a little bit lighter and friendlier. Mm-hmm. Especially if you get into things like Super Friends and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that could also be because of the Batman 60s show. You know,
sure.
That there are multiple Batmen in people's minds. You know, there is the Dark in the Shadows, Christian Bale Batman. I mean, hell, you could even put the Michael Keaton Batman in there to a point. And then you've got the Holy Caffeine Batman from the 60s, which could fall into Super Friends and Batman Brave and the Bold.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing to look at there. Before we go on any further, let me just read this audio comment from comment from Matthew Guy real quick, and I'll save the other two comments for part two. Marvel only has two iconic characters, Spider-Man and the Hulk. DC has Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash. Teen Titans and other DCAU projects. Superman is the American icon for many decades, with movies, TV shows, cartoons. Hell, there is a TV show on right now called Smallville that is in its ninth season. I'll comment on that after we're done reading here, but I'm not quite sure if I would actually say Superman with that, because there are some people that might not even know that that's Superman per se. They might just think that it's Smallville, but I'll get into that later on. Batman and Wonder Woman are icons of previous decades. Adam West and Linda Carter, those shows have been in reruns for years on TV. Batman evolved beyond West to include Keaton and currently Bale. Flash was on for only one season, sadly, but Teen Titans and other DC properties have been in cartoon form for the youth of many generations, from watching Super Friends to Justice League and many other series in between. DC has its properties in more formats, proving it has the most iconic characters over its rival, and that's from Matthew Guy there. You know, he makes some points that we've made along the lines in this conversation, but I'm not quite sold on him talking about Smallville, because Smallville, I'd say, is more Clark Kent and less Superman.
I actually think that his Smallville argument has a little bit more weight than the Teen Titans comment. Okay. Only reason why is I think people who – kids that watch Teen Titans go, I agree with them 100%. They're aware who the characters are that are the Teen Titans. But it's – the Teen Titans has really gone nowhere since then.
Right.
As far as in the media, we don't see anything Teen Titans related right now. Is Teen Titans Go still in reruns?
It's on Boomerang.
Okay, yeah. So that is still visible on Boomerang. So, okay, that adds more weight to his argument there. So I'll take that back a little bit. Mm-hmm. But going on what we said before about Superman being more recognizable, at this point in time, we are seeing in Smallville the S-Shield, and it's been pretty prevalent in the series, especially in the later seasons, where you're seeing the S-Shield. You know, this you can't go a week now on Smallville without seeing the S-Shield in some format. Yeah. So I do think it's a lot more recognizable now that is a Superman show, and that Superman is there as a character for people that are watching it. For the same reason that you would go with what you guys have been saying, merchandising-wise, people see the S-Shield all over the place. So I do think that is visible on that show. Earlier seasons, I would agree with you. Mm-hmm. You know, where it was more Clark Kent focused. But I do think the later seasons, the transition has slowly started to take place where the S-Shield has become, especially this season, the S-Shield is very prevalent this season.
Right. Well, and I am behind on my Smallville. I actually only watched occasional episodes from these seasons. I mean, technically, I've watched everything up to near the end of season two, and then I've watched occasional episodes here and there. So I'll take your word for it on that. I mean, I'm obviously going to watch the Justice Society episodes. You know, I mean, damned watching it in order or not, I need to watch those episodes.
It's going to be a movie. Episodes.
Yeah, called Absolute Justice, which right away makes me think of Alex Ross. And how about Michael Shanks playing Hawkman in that? I mean,
I've seen the image. All I've seen, I mean, obviously what we've seen so far is the static image.
Yeah.
I want to see it in motion before I make a judgment on it. There were things that I liked about the image, being that it's a still image, it's not the way you want to see it.
Yeah.
Visibly, I'm like, okay, they're sticking to the core of what makes it, you know, interesting. And, when I saw the trailer, have you seen the trailer?
I have, yeah.
Okay, when you see the trailer and you start seeing characters like Dr. Fate and Sandman in motion, it gives me a lot more faith in what Hawkman's going to be like on screen. Mm-hmm. I think it works a lot better seeing it in motion with the production values of the special effects in play and all that. Because Dr. Fate and Sandman in that trailer, I mean, feel free to disagree with me, but I thought they looked super cool.
Yeah, and how about that quick flash of a Green Lantern ring?
Yeah,
that made me sort of geek out there too. But I still think though it is inspired casting to get the guy who's been Egypt on SG-1 to play Carter Hall.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you're right. We'll see how it plays on the screen. But I have a feeling they're also going to do a little bit of a Watchmen take on the JSA, since they're like the washed up heroes coming out of retirement, sort of to do the whole Clark Kent thing. But that's another story for another time. Let's get Jim's comments on what Matthew Guy said.
No, I'm kind of a ditto on a lot of what you guys were saying. I was just sitting back listening, going, "Yeah, yeah, it is." Nodding my head, going, "Jim, you probably should, you know, join in the conversation."
so he echoes your comments, basically.
Yeah, I gotta echo sentiment on the Teen Titans and the Titans Go and all that stuff, but you know, I don't know. I don't think that has helped really Titans become, you know, or growing iconic. It was something that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you look at the JLA cartoon. That was a great cartoon that ended, and it shouldn't have ended. They could have kept it going, and they should have kept it going. You know, well, JLU, you know, that was out there, and there's been some great cartoons that hasn't, you know, that get stopped, and everyone's like, why is this stopping? This is a great cartoon, and. Yeah. Like, yeah, well, we don't control that. And that was always the answer given. You know, Smallville's really has fleshed out things. I think one of the people's big, the non-comic book fans, their biggest complaint for Smallville was the build-up towards what we're seeing now. People wanted to see this a couple seasons ago. They want to see him be actually put on the costume and become Superman. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think Smallville is helping out with further and continuation of the iconic status that is Superman.
You know, I think at the core of what he's saying, and I guess this would be the interesting point, do you guys think that the DC characters have been more visible in the media than the Marvel characters? Because, I mean, I think that's really at the core of what his comment is saying.
Right. I'd say if you're factoring in the larger amount of time that DC's characters have been around in Marvel, then mm-hmm. I would say yes. If you're focusing on the past couple of years, then the debate can be made. In fact, one of the last questions that I was going to ask you guys that can sort of play off of this a little bit once you give your answers on this question is 10 years from now, if Marvel continues to put out successful movie after successful movie after successful movie, are we still going to be saying that DC is on top? Because that seems to be what we were sort of aiming towards in most of this. That, I mean, yes, Marvel and DC are very, very close. I mean, it is sort of 2-1, like Sean was saying earlier. But given another 10 years, if DC doesn't come out with any successful movies and Marvel's still there, will the tables turn on who's iconic? That's the question. I mean, this is basically the last question before we head out of here. So let's just have everybody wrap on up, and then we can all call it a night. All right. So let's get Jim's thoughts on everything, and then we'll roll over to Sean.
You know, it's the funny thing is, like, recently I would say Marvel is getting their stuff out there, but I think it's because over the long haul, the concept and what not behind the DC heroes that we like so much, and these things that make these characters so awesome, DC has done a better job of getting that out there. You know, some of the cool stuff on Spidey that is out, you know, it's not really completely coming out to the general layman. You know about the spider, you know about the proportional strength of the spider, but the snappy one-liners that Spidey has, you know, just the fact that he was the geeky kid who was given these powers, who, you know, hid behind the mask and who became this great iconic hero. You know, I think that's kind of gotten lost in the thing. Whereas when you look at, you know, Clark, and you look at Bruce and what they've done and where they went to become who they are, those stories, that background story, the backstory behind the hero is more readily known. And I think that's what gives, you know, them the edge over Spider-Man. You know, like right now, look at the stuff that they're doing in the Marvel Universe. They really shook up the Marvel Universe, but people outside of the comic book community have no idea what's going on. Everything from Civil War to Cap dying to just, you know, the fight among the hero choosing sides and what the current face of the Marvel Universe is, I don't think people outside of our little community understand this and know this and have seen this coming. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I always give the iconic edge to DC.
You know what's great about doing this show for as long as I've done it, Jim, is that when we first started, I would have had absolutely no idea what you were talking about when you said the whatnot that the DC universe has, and yet I've been doing it long enough. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Really? Can you explain it to me?
Yeah, I drive Sean nuts with that one. I try to throw it out there.
I'm not going to try to explain it, man. All right? All right? If you don't get it, then you just don't understand.
Exactly.
I admit that. It's funny. You know, you talk about long term. Where could it go? I think if you talk about it, comics right now, props have got to be given to Marvel for how successfully they've managed to put together events that have given them a fan base that has continued to follow. Sales numbers wise, it has shown in the top 10 books. You know that Marvel's been doing a fantastic job as far as capturing and putting a stranglehold on that. I think it's been cool watching in the comics things like Blackest Night kind of bringing some notice back to DC. I love competition. I think competition's great for it. As far as iconic characters, if Marvel continues with their films, I think we're going to see characters that surprise us, like Iron Man. If you had told me when the Iron Man movie was announced that it was going to be as successful as it was, I don't know that I would have agreed. I'm not saying that I thought it was going to be a bad film or anything like that. I think it would have been. I thought it would have been entertaining. I thought it would have done well as far as what you would expect it to do box number wise. But it really was probably a bigger success. It was a bigger success certainly than I thought it was going to be, because it was pretty huge, and the film was phenomenal. I think there's going to be some surprising characters out of both DC and Marvel that stick. I'm with Jim in the camp that I would love to see Green Lantern stick. It's hard to say what that's going to look like now without seeing the film product. The reality is you do need, if you want these characters to become iconic, you need them to explode beyond the comic medium. It's going to be interesting to see what characters do that and which ones have the potential to be future icons to add to that stack of, you know, we basically labeled three right now as ones that are pretty solidly recognizable. You know, the Hulk is one of those I still feel kind of borderline on. And I know you guys kind of feel that way with Captain America. But here's another one. Captain America is a guy, you put Captain America in the right film, going on everything you guys said about the fact how that concept's been played in the media already, you put him in a great film that really captures what's cool about Captain America, and there's a character who could potentially explode.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got in the Brubaker book, you really hand that to the scriptwriter and say, this is the core of what's cool. Because Brubaker was obviously a Cap fan of old, because he seemed to capture everything I liked as a kid growing up in various eras of reading Captain America. I will admit I didn't read everything Captain America, but I have pockets of runs of Captain America that were just fantastic, brilliant stuff. And, you know, the stuff where the character who became U.S. agent was Cap for a while, and Cap was dressed up in the U.S. agent costume and stuff. See, I loved that stuff with Cap. It was, you know, growing, you know, I remember when he and Wolverine, they had that iconic cover of the two of them fighting and that annual, it was awesome. So he's a character who has the potential to explode more than he is. I mean, and it's argued, you know, by you guys that he's a lot more out there than even I'm thinking. I don't know as far as will there be more. It all depends on how they get them out in the media. Marvel certainly right now has their eye on how to touch a larger audience with film. And the relationships they built for merchandising and getting them out in video games and stuff like that, they're doing a really great job with that. I think DC's definitely taking notice. I think Disney Marvel is going to be very interesting to watch. Is that going to be a good thing? Is it going to limit Marvel in some way? I can't imagine that being a bad thing. I think it's only going to bring more notice to it. But I also think Warner DC's taken notice, and we're going to – I think this is only going to work for us as fans, and I think we're going to see some characters that are becoming icons that weren't previously.
Right. Well, I think – and here's something that, you know, we really haven't touched on that much. The fact that Marvel is now in the Disney camp is going to factor a lot into the upcoming years for Marvel, mostly because Disney has in its power the ability to get Marvel characters out there in ways that Marvel could never do before on their own. And if Disney chooses, they could do a blitz that puts Marvel comic books in places that they've never been before, Marvel characters in places that they've never been before, and even Marvel video games in places that they've never been before. Let's see what happens with that. And let's see what happens with the Thor movie, the Captain America movie, and the Avengers movie. Because if the Avengers movie does big, then DC is really at a tough point because they are going to have to put out movies that are on scale with them, or Marvel could very well eclipse them, not only in revenue, which they already do in many aspects, but also in iconic status, because you're going to have a bunch of characters that are in the eye that could very well stick around for a lot much longer than that. So these next couple of years are going to be important to track for the Marvel versus DC debate on who has the most iconic characters.
DC does have certain freedoms, or, you know, Warner. We got to talk about Warner at this point.
Yeah.
That there's certain contracts that Marvel has already made with their characters being at other studios at the moment.
Right.
That includes gaming, that includes film, you know, all that.
Those are all up in the next 3 years.
Right. So it really is Warner, and it seems like they're going to, needs to get on the ball. But I'm a believer that competition, as long as they're both companies are putting out good films, they're actually going to help each other in many ways.
Right.
Because as long as you keep people interested in the genre because they're getting quality product, then this will work. If we get Catwoman's, it's going to all fizzle. It doesn't matter who's putting them out. You can shove that junk all over the place, and people aren't going to bite.
Please don't.
You know, it's got to be quality product. But if they're both doing it, people are going to get excited for them. You know, every 6 months, or even during the summer, every month you've got a comic film coming out every month during the summer months, the big blockbuster months, they'll do well if they're good.
No Catwoman's, please.
Yes.
All right, gentlemen, I think we've said more in these 2 hours than anyone has ever wanted to hear about iconic characters. And yet, they still have one more part of Comic Timing Episode 100 to deal with after this. Luckily, those segments will all be about 40 minutes long, but because nobody was following us after this, we went the gambit, and that's the important thing, all right? Because I could not silence Sean and Jim, because no one can silence Sean and Jim. No one. Many have tried. But none have succeeded. It's
Wait,
true.
You thought 40? I thought you said 400 minutes.
Oh, God. Guys, thank you. Thank you for being a part of the show over the past couple of years. And, you know, thank you for being a friend in the podcasting community. And definitely thank you for being a part of episode 100, because I wouldn't want it any other way.
Actually, I want to thank you and your audience for your patience, actually. I got a little emotionally charged during this discussion, but...
Really?
It was... Yeah, just a little tad. But honestly, it was only because I thought it was a very cool discussion topic. I do think the interesting thing out of all this was the fact that what is the definition of iconic to us? I think as we went through this, I think we were slowly developing that, but it's a big term.
Yeah.
And I thank you for having me on, and thank you for your friendship, and congratulations to Comic Timing and to its listeners for 100 episodes. This was a lot of fun, and I appreciate you inviting me to be a part of it. It's a topic that as we go off, I don't feel like I've totally wrapped my head around where it's totally at yet. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great, because I will think about this beyond the episode. I'll be anxious to see what your listeners put in your forums as far as what their thoughts were, because I think there's a lot more discussion that can branch out of this. And I'd love to see a lot of feedback as far as who people feel are icons. Why did we miss people? Did we misrepresent people? You know, as far as did we skip on something that you would have wanted to see? And I just think this was really cool and fun. And thanks for 100 episodes of you guys entertaining all of us, because it's a great show. And I'm glad to, in some small way, have been able to be a part of some of your episodes. So thanks a lot for that.
You're very, very welcome. And Jim, thanks for hanging in there.
Oh, yeah, Ian. You know, thank you for being a friend. I had to do some singing. As soon as you said that, man, the Golden Girls just popped in my head. I was like, oh, dear God, I have to sing that.
Sensei on the half shell. Sensei power. All right. Well, everybody, like I said, stay tuned for part two, which will be coming out next week. And hopefully that'll go off without a hitch, as that'll be from my temporary residence in Washington State. So anybody who listens to the show in Washington State, please call me. I need friends. I need friends. Please, please, please. I'm so alone. I'm so alone. Okay, I'm done.
The Levinstein bunker.
Oh, God. All right. Well, and I'll try to avoid as many Twilight fans as possible. Okay, so the email address of Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com. Graciously hosted by Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. And we're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com and the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. So for Mandy and for Sean and for Jim, you can find all their stuff over at ragingbullets.com. And for the missing Brent Messina, I hope your day was nice, my friend. You will get yours. Your time will come. And as always, there's always time for comics.
He is the most iconic hero from any publishing company ever.
I agree with your statement wholeheartedly.
I would follow Blue Beetle anyway.
Now, that's number one. So actually, what we're doing, you're the only thing we're recording tonight. So we're not constrained to the 45 minutes we originally were going to be constrained to.
Oh, I thought you said 400 minutes.
400 minutes is actually more like what you guys usually do anyway, so that's fine. So we don't have to worry about running over, since, you know, you two are really good at that. And yeah, hey, Frank Castle said that him and his family would be up for, you know, occasional lunches and dinners, so that's good. Since him and his family live out there, so.
You should call him every day.
Be like, hey, buddy. Hey, Frank Castle. How you doing? You know, my real name isn't Frank Castle. You know that, right? I know, but I like calling you Frank Castle. It's like I'm talking to the real Punisher. You know, he's a Frankenstein monster now.
I do that with Leroy all the time.
I heard about that.
Leroy's always Ziggo to me.
Yes. I do the exact same thing. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, like, just now, like, I gotta be honest with you, it's only been in the last, like, maybe 4 months that I've realized his name is Leroy, so it's not Ziggo.
I know what you mean, Norge. Yeah.
Well, I gotta be honest with you, there's a lot of people before podcasts that have been calling me that, so it's not so odd.
Sorry.
It's okay.
She's in tight.
Yeah, and you know what? A little bit lower, Mandy.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're still, like, a little bit loud in my ears.
How's that?
A little bit more.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay.
Okay, good. Yeah, that'll work. Now you're in about the same level range as everybody else, so that's good.
Okay.
So hopefully the...
How am I?
You're great.
Well, if you yell into the microphone...
I turned up the volume all the way.
Well, turn it up, dude.
Yeah!
Loud and proud!
Alright! Yeah, why? Oh, speaking of voices like that, have either of you seen the Turtles Forever that aired this past weekend?
No! Good?
Oh my God, it is so good.
I'll have to watch it.
I felt like a kid all over again. It's literally Crisis on Infinite Turtles. Because it's the 88 Turtles meeting the 2003 Turtles, and they even throw in the Mirage black and white Turtles at one point.
Is it really like a Turtles crossover?
Yeah, it is. It's a crossover. Nice. They basically established that all the Turtles exist in one multiverse.
Hey, the multiverse is awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would love to have been into that meeting. where somebody said, you know, we really need to pull, because a lot of people are complaining about turtle continuity. We really need to pull this together.
Serious so retcons going on.
Yes, because people want to feel like their turtles are the turtles. And if we do it this way and we bring them all together, everyone will feel like they're part of the turtle universe.
Well, you say that as if you're making a joke, and yet this also acts as the last Turtles production by Mirage. Now that they've sold it.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah.
So are they going to start new episode numbering then?
I don't know if they're going to start new episode numbering or issue numbering or anything like that, but I know that Nickelodeon now owns Ninja Turtles. Like exclusively. So.
All the Ninja Turtles or just some of the Ninja Turtles from the Turtles Forever?
all of them, Sean. All of them. Including the ones that exist in your head.
Now, are we going to get a new album from them? Because I got their first album, Out of Your Shell, Out of Their Shell. You know, and it had a couple pretty cool numbers in it. I'm hoping they will get a new, CD from them.
Jim, did you know that there was an Out of Our Shell tour?
Yes. It came to Cleveland.
Oh, really?
Are you kidding me? He had front row seats.
Hey.
Are you kidding me? He's still there.
Jim still throws out an album.
He got his picture taken with all of them, I heard, too.
Oh, yeah. He was wearing his Michelangelo outfit.
Yes.
God. Turtle the whatnot. I would love to see it.
Too bad this isn't on our own show. People won't know about this.
What do you mean? Too bad it isn't on our own show. Who said I won't bring it up?
Yeah, and Jim, you know that I'm always recording.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
What
yeah,
not on the half shell? What the power? I might have to change the intro I had planned for you now. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine what Sean's next and joining me on the show.
Jim?
Oh, I already have five ideas for the next one. Yeah. You're lucky it's a preacher episode. Yeah, no. I think we lost Mandy.
And we lost Jim. Never mind.
No, I'm still here.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, Mandy is not here. What's it called? No, you know what it is? Because you're still whited out on that thing. I never know what it is.
I see Mandy's name.
Yeah, let me call. I'm calling her back, and she's not picking up. Maybe her Skype disconnected on her.
Yeah, she's not on.
Yeah, she's not actually on. All right, we'll wait on her. But
I don't know if this is the direction you wanted to go. As long as she's not on here, is this the direction you wanted to go?
I'm honestly not even sure, but I'm having fun.
I am too. You know, it's an interesting discussion point because I guess.
Please enjoy the music while your party is reached.
Rock on! And we're done. So let's talk about Blue Beetle.
I gotta log to go to home. I gotta go to bed now. Sleep.
That's fine, man. I gotta wake up for tomorrow anyway. So. Guys, happy Thanksgiving.
You too,
enjoy
man.
Enjoy your turkey coma. I know I will.
I still think we can talk Blue Beetle.
You guys can talk Blue Beetle. I'm gonna log off.
All right, everybody have a wonderful holiday weekend, and I will talk to you guys later.
Cool. Right. Take it easy, man.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.